wonderful to see happy.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
We ready, guys? Who wants to do the mission statement? Rachel, you want to do the mission statement?
She looks like she does.
Okay, there you go. It's not in your bag. No. It was just paper. It was a tournament, but yeah, we had a good time. It was a great turnout and stuff. But we missed you. We had a good time.
Okay. Yeah, it's Kathy with a K.
If anyone would like to address the board during the opening ceremony, go ahead and sign up here at this desk. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Ready? Everybody?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Chair out there? Okay, guys, let's start.
We have the yellow highlights, how we're going to do.
Yes.
Yeah, the brakes.
Uh-huh. Got it. All right. Good evening, everybody. This is the regular board meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Canutillo Independent School District. Tonight is May 19th. 2011. The time is 6:05 p.m. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Essens?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searles?
Here, and Mrs. Mendoza had asked that I would give her regrets to everyone that she was not able to be here. She had family business. And she was very sad that she wasn't able to be here for such a wonderful meeting. So please accept her apologies.
All right. Thank you very much. And Ms. Mendoza did advise the board about her not being able to attend. And we'll miss her at this meeting since it's a very happy occasion. All right. At this time, everybody please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States flag and to the Texas flag. And if we could have Ms. Searles, if you would lead us, please, in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Searles. Ms. Quintana, would you please read the Canutillo mission statement?
Yes, sir. Canutillo ISD will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
All right, thank you, Ms. Quintana. That takes us to the next agenda item, Tony.
That would be a moment of silence in memory of Raymundo Rodriguez.
All right, and this is a Mr. Villalobos.
Yes.
I just want to read something about Mr. Villalobos. He began his career as a custodian in the Gadsden School District, our neighboring district, putting himself through school and eventually becoming a teacher. He came to our district in 1995, and he was just completing 27 years of experience in the education field. Mr. Villalobos was a teacher at Deanna Davenport for 16 years. He taught 6th grade, 5th grade, 2nd grade, and at the time of his passing, he was a 1st grade teacher. For many years, Mr. Villalobos was in charge of the father-son program at Deanna Davenport to instill in the students a desire to continue higher education. His favorite color was green, he loved dogs, his favorite song was Un Puño de Tierra, and he loved his old Nova car and El Caminos. But most of all, he loved teaching and singing with his students. If y'all would please rise in a moment of silence for Mr. Villalobos. Thank you, everybody. All right. Tony, next agenda item.
Board recognitions, Mr. Reveles.
Good evening, Mr. Reveles.
Good evening, Board President Coronado, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. Could you please join me on the steps in front of the dais to begin this month's board recognition, please? Canutillo. Our schools are thriving, our students are learning, and our future looks brighter than ever. As proof, we are here to recognize a long string of standouts from our learning community who have made a mark through their hard work and dedication on behalf of the Canutillo Independent School District. 4 Canutillo ISD students were honored by the Texas Association of Gifted and Talented Education for their academic gains during the school year that is culminating. Each one of them will be receiving a scholarship that will allow them to continue their learning through their summer months. Could Vivian Sanchez please come up and greet the board? Vivian Sanchez is a fifth grader at Garcia Elementary, a GT student who will spend her summer at the Kids and Co. Theater Troupe.
Thank you.
Valdez, please come up. She has also a sixth grader out there at the middle school, and she will be, she'll spend the summer in the advanced theater production for teens summer camp at the El Paso Community College. Chase Gray, a student at Canopio Middle School, please come up and greet the board.
All right.
Chase this year participated in the Talent Search Duke TIP program for TAC. After taking the SAT over the winter, he qualified for the State Recognition and Academy for Summer Studies, the program for college-bound students. While there, his TIP scores were deemed to be above the national average for high school juniors and seniors. Of being both college graduates and high school seniors next year. Could Sarah Elizabeth Joyner and Jose Carlos Hernandez please come up and greet the board? Sarah and Juan Carlos still have a year to go before graduating with the first class at Neches, but because of their hard work and dedication, they were able to earn another college credit to earn an associate's degree from ETCC. Next is on track to graduate another 20 to 25 students after the summer school courses are finished. Those students will be able to participate in winter commencement. This month for his great aptitude in entrepreneurship education. This shows our students are stepping out to the plate, ready to be leaders in our business community. Could Fernando Gascon, a senior at Cantillo High School, and business teacher Jim Barna, please come up and greet the board. Gascon participated in the entrepreneurship event of the Business Professionals of America National Leadership Conference in Washington, D.C. on May 4th through the 8th. There, he placed in seventh place in the nation among dozens of other participants. Fernando earned a spot in the national competition by placing first at the BPA State Leadership Conference in Fort Worth earlier this spring. Please let's give a round of applause to Fernando. Agency. Earlier this spring, the GA notified the superintendent's office that Damian was once again a Title I Part A distinguished school. Could JD Principal Maggie Grant please come up and greet the board? Title I Part 4A distinguished schools are recognized for their consistent high academic performance. Each recipient must be an exemplary school that serves the student population that is at least 40% of all income. Congratulations, Mrs. Grant. Please send our good wishes to the JD family of teachers, staff, and students. Several integral members of our Canutillo ISD community, school nurses. Governor Rick Perry declared May 11th School Nurses Day, and the Canutillo ISD community wants to extend their gratitude at tonight's meeting. Will the following school nurses please step up and be recognized by the board? Betsa Van Britten from Canutillo ISD.
Presentation. Thank you, Gustavo. Administration, Doc. Board, anybody? Comments? Anybody? I just want to, you know, really one of the things that stands out for me because, you know, I really wanted this for this school district is the Northwest Early College High School, and to see that two of our students are getting their associate's degree before they finish their junior year in high school. Okay, is really to be commended, and we really want to again congratulate both of you. Great job, and I know you guys are going to go on to college, and you know, as part of what the foundation that helped us start the Northwest Early College High School, the Texas Foundation, they're giving a scholarship to each of the individuals who graduate from Northwest Early College High School with their associate's degree to continue their college career. And I know some of them are planning to attend UTEP already before, you know, to start their junior year before they finish high school. So, you know, congratulations to you guys. Keep up the good work, and, you know, a round of applause again. Well done. Board? Mr. Rodriguez.
I'm extremely proud, especially of the students, the Northwest Early College, which is one of, in our beginning stages, but, and all the other students that came, as well as some of our nurses, that is much appreciated. When I was in school, I know I appreciated when I got sick and I had a rest there. So I want to thank that. But to the younger ones, my favorite quote is from an Irish poet, which is William Butler Yeats, and it says, "Education is not a pail to be filled, but a fire to be ignited. So go on and ignite those fires and conquer the world."
Yeah. Well said. Again, congratulations to all the recipients and the individuals that were recognized. I can see that we're very proud of all our teachers, our students, our nurses, all our staff. Really, Canutillo is a great place, and we're going places. So, all right. Thank you, Board, Administration. Next agenda item.
Item 3, Superintendent's comments. Dr. Murphy.
Board President Coronado, members of the board, great audience. I hope you all stick around another 15 or 20 minutes because we have some wonderful things to do in the next little bit. And the first thing is Decision Canyon TO 2011 DC 2011 update. And pardon if I grin, it's been a fantastic effort by everyone in the district. We're very proud that the votes came in the way they did, and we're just thrilled of the confidence and the trust of President and board members that the community has entrusted in us. We know that it is a precious resource, a precious thing that we must cherish and be transparent about and be open about, and we certainly have a commitment to do that all the way through. We one of the things I'm most gratified was the voter turnout. Across the county on Saturday, in all the other elections, the average voter turnout hovered right around 5%, and that's being a little generous. Canyon-Teo ISD vote 17% voter turnout here in Canyon-Teo, over 3 times. That was our desire for the community. You know, Gustavo and I spent a lot of time, you can tell by my head, out in the sun, and our message was, please let your voice be heard, whether it be positive, whether it be negative. Come to the polls and vote. And they did, and we greatly appreciate the result and the participation. We're thrilled about this, and I could go on and on, but just, board, thank you for your participation, your long hours regarding this. Staff, thank you. Cabinet, in particular, put in countless hours. Gustavo Ravelis, how about a round for Gustavo? Everyone that came out, the organizers. Annette Brigham is another person that was just so key in the effort. Is she here tonight? Is Annette here? No, Annette. But how about in abstention? Last but certainly not least, our wonderful 32 teachers that hung in there. Public record and take just 15 seconds to explain that the state had a requirement on us that if we did not non-renew prior to April 20th, we would not be able to, and that's what forced our hand. We waited until April 17th, but it was required, and They spent a couple months in limbo, and I apologize for that state law. I didn't set it, but that's the way it was. And we it was a necessity at the time regarding our funding, but we were able to be successful, and we are just thrilled that tonight you'll come back to us fully. So congratulations. Moving forward, also another thing to celebrate, and if we didn't have the election, this would be our page one story. Kangatio ISD, 100% No Place for Hate, certified by the National Anti-Defamation League. Fantastic. Kangatio ISD becomes the first district west of Austin in all of Texas to be a No Place for Hate school district. And every campus participated in at least four school-wide anti-bullying activities, including the signing of the resolution of respect to the board. Thank you for your participation in this. We celebrated this last Monday on our district-wide No Place for Hate Recognition Day, with every school receiving a fully certified banner. The representatives from Houston, where the offices flew out on their own expense, they were so excited to present it to us. And it's just fantastic. It's not the total solution. I had to actually deal with a bullying incident yesterday at one of our campuses. Things do happen, but it does give us a framework and a direction and a mission. And I greatly appreciate that, and we absolutely will be continuing that program. And one of the greatest things about it is that the No Place for Hate program is free of charge to the district. So congratulations again, No Place for Hate across the entire district. Third item is much more mundane. I just want to report Ernie and Martha and everyone involved has done a wonderful job regarding textbooks this year. And of merit, you'll be getting a report later this summer that shows that instead of multiple thousands of dollars of textbook losses, we're right now looking at very minimal losses this year due to the Hays software that the board so generously purchased for us. We're very excited about that, and the preliminary reports show the losses in the hundreds of dollars and not in the literally tens of thousands of dollars, so that's going to be fantastic news. So savings to the district. That's really all I have, and we'll move forward to the good business. Thank you, President. Thank you, Board.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Board, any comments, questions for Dr. Murphy? All right. Thank you, Dr. Murphy, again. Tony.
Item 4A, consider order canvassing results of tax rate election. Mr. Baskin.
Larry, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
Isn't very good.
Very good. Mr. Cornell, board members, Dr. Murphy, and members of the audience, it's a very good evening. I'm Larry Baskin, school district attorney, and I'm here to present to the board the canvassing orders for the tax rate election and the bond election. And I'm going to give to Ms. Blaze the official original returns of the election for the school district's records. Keep those. I have put in front of each board member a copy of the combined official returns, which we didn't get till 3 o'clock this afternoon. And actually, the vote changed by one vote, increase for and against both the bond and the TRE from the official returns. We have overseas and out-of-town ballots have until Wednesday after the election to come in. So the count changes slightly from what you would have seen in the paper. I also put in front of you the orders approving the canvass of the votes. And the first item on the agenda relates to the TRE. And you should have a one-pager in front of you. Mm-hmm. And for the record, the vote count in favor of the tax rate election was 990 votes. Against the tax rate election was 731, Dr. Murphy's smiling. I want to congratulate the board. It was an amazingly courageous act to go out for two elections at the same time. I wondered about your sanity when you did it, but you proved it to be right. And Dr. Murphy, congratulations to you and your team. I've never seen the school district work as hard on elections as y'all did, and I congratulate the community because this is a hard vote. We increased taxes, and the community put the kids first, and that's what's really important. That's what we're here for. One comment I want to make is I want to suggest to the board that we disarm Dr. Murphy and take away that bullhorn. But you have in front of you that the canvassing order, and I don't think it's necessary to read the whole thing tonight, but the administration recommends the board approve the order canvassing the election results of the tax rate election.
All right. Thank you, Larry, very much for the presentation. I'll open it up to a discussion of the board or entertaining a motion to approve the order.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Mr. Rodriguez.
On the change on this was we have the most updated, correct?
The one in front of you was the official results. I changed that. I got that at 3 o'clock this afternoon from county elections, and the vote count changed by one vote up for four and one vote up against from the unofficial returns. What you had in your packages earlier was the draft based upon the unofficial returns from Saturday night.
And I just wanted to make sure because I have both and I don't want to. So it's the 990 and the 731, right?
It is the 990 and the 731. Those are the official returns.
Mr. Chair, with that, if I might make a motion to consider the order or to approve the order canvassing the results of the tax ratification election.
All right.
Should I say the amount?
Please say the amount.
In favor of the proposition was 990 votes, and against the proposition was 731 votes.
All right, we have a motion before the board. Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. And we have a second. Thank you, Ms. Quintana. To approve an order canvassing the results of the tax rate election that was held on May 14th. In favor of the proposition, 990 votes, and against the proposition, 731 votes. This motion is now up for discussion by the board. Comments or questions? Hearing none, Tony, please pull the board.
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Comments? Mr. Rodriguez?
I guess one of the things is, you know, there's a great sense of pride in the community within ourselves, the trust you all have given us, and I think the most important thing is that we're investing in our children's future, and that's number one, and it's so gratifying to see that the community is willing to invest in our children when the state is looking at cutting and not willing to invest. And we see that, I mean, we've seen that throughout this legislative session, and we don't see no end to it. They continue to hold off on it, but they don't have no solution for sure, and they don't want to dip into the fund balance, which is kind of sad to see that our state legislator is not willing to invest in our children's education. When you look at, you know, sometimes on some investments, when you see 4-year lows, this, you know, our children's investments are about 10 or 15 year lows when we see that, when we don't invest. And it's critical that we continue to invest, and I'm very proud of our community and you know, the confidence that they've given in us, and we're gonna continue to raise, you know, the bar and continue to succeed and make sure our kids continue to succeed and our employees have the resources that are needed. And we hope that in the long run, the legislator will actually look at what needs to be done to help out, and hopefully that will change, but we don't see it in the next 2 years. So I'm very proud of our community, and I'm very excited at the opportunity that we have to really show leadership within the state, because the state doesn't want to show that leadership. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Anybody else? I just want to thank the community on behalf of the students of Canutillo Independent School District. This was really needed for our kids, and I want to thank the community for stepping forward and believing that this is a priority for us. And so I want to thank the community for participating first and foremost, and for supporting this measure. And again, not only for our students, but for our staff, our personnel, and of course, mostly our teachers, who we dearly want back. Motion passes. Next agenda item.
Item 4B, consider order canvassing results of bond election. Mr. Rapaston.
Good evening, board members. This is part two of the good part of our meeting tonight. We'll get to part three in a minute, the best part. But this is the resolution or the order to canvass the bond election. The results were 922 votes for and 783 against. And again, that vote count changed slightly by one vote. For and against, from the unofficial results you saw in the paper Sunday and heard Saturday evening. This authorizes the school district in the future as needed to authorize to issue $43,950,000 worth of bonds to improve our school district and improve the school. We don't need to read the entire resolution, but we do need a motion to approve the order of canvassing the results.
All right, thank you, Larry. Board?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to approve the order canvassing the elections for the results of the bond election.
Please state the vote count. Yep.
The vote count was for 922, against 783.
All right. We have a motion before the board, and did I hear a second?
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second on agenda item 4B. To approve the order canvassing the results of the bond election that was held on May 14, 2011 for the bond, the amount of $43,950,000, 922 votes for and 783 votes against. Any discussion, comments by the board, questions? Hearing none, Tony, please pull the board.
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Motion passes. Congratulations. Dr. Murphy.
I want to announce that we found out some interesting news. We found out that Canutillo ISD is only the second district in the history of the TRE program, which started in 2006, only the second district in the state of Texas to pass both a bond and a TRE on the same day.
Mr. Chair.
That
just goes to show you, we are special.
You know, that is a good thing to know, that this community really, in the face of this kind of an economy, that they still, our community still said yes to education, and that it's probably the most important to this community, that we go forward with the plans of educating our children. And so with that, I think the community deserves a round of applause for passing both of these. And certainly we made history, and some people thought we were crazy to do this. But you know what? If you believe that the community has the right disposition and heart for the education of the kids of this community, we felt that they would step forward, and boy did they. And we really appreciate the participation. Not just that we passed it by a few votes, or just by a few people voting. We really made an effort to make sure that the community participated as much as possible. One way or another, we wanted to hear from the community how they really felt about it, and we did. And we want to thank everybody involved who increased the participation for the community to come out and vote. And we really want to thank everybody. So thank you again. Ms. Gonzalez.
Aware that 32 out of those 32 professionals that had not been renewed their contract, 8 of those were Crown of Tio residents. So we're there. I'm very elated to tonight. We're going to bring you back. And for those that exercise your right by voting, it is a privilege. And whether you voted no or whether you voted yes, it is a privilege, and continue exercising that right. We really appreciate it.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Just real quick, the first one, which the tax ratification deals with our maintenance and operation on a day-to-day basis, and we're grateful for that. And, you know, on this bond issue, it's really critical for us to look at the fact that on this bond program, it's about having equality throughout all our campuses. It doesn't matter which campus you're at or where you live. It's a matter of that you're going to have the same air conditioning system or the same type of building throughout our district, and that's something that is very proud to be very proud as a community. We should be very proud, and so I thank the community on that measure, because it's critical that we're equal with all our children, and that's something that we strive for and we will continue to strive for.
Well said. Very well said. Anybody else? All right. Again, thank everybody for this historic occasion of passing both of these measures. And again, it's to the credit of the community that they spoke. And I personally want to thank our administration for the incredible amount of work and time that they put into this effort. And that everybody involved, including the Political Action Committee, the students who walked on Saturday, they walked out in the neighborhood asking the community to support these measures. And also want to thank the board for the to thank the board for being completely united on this effort. And I think that it shows that when we have our administration and our board united, we really can accomplish a lot. So I want to thank everybody. Dr. Murphy, thank you for you. All right. All right, with the board's consent, we would like to place the addendum on the agenda for the revocation of the non-renewals. If you will please take out your addendum. Hearing no dissent from the board, we will then proceed to our addendum on the agenda to consider the revocation of the previous non-renewal of certain probationary contract teachers and employees and approve the renewal of these probationary contract teachers and employees. Mr. Baskin and Ms. Carrasco will make the presentation. And board, I think you have those, I don't know if you have your addendums on this.
President Colorado,
Ms. Carrasco.
Dr. Murphy. For the record, I am Martha Carrasco, Executive Director of Human Resources. On April 14th, the funding outlook for Canutillo School District showed the need to non-renew 32 of our first year Chapter 21 personnel, which included both teachers and other employees, in order to maintain fiscal solvency. A painful but necessary decision was made by the Board of Trustees to inform these 32 employees that their jobs were not secure for the 2011-2012 school year. But tonight, it is my pleasure to inform the board and the Canutillo community that our economic outlook has improved, due to the passage of the TRE this past Saturday. Therefore, it is with great pride that I come before you tonight with the recommendation to you as a board to reverse that April 14th decision and to approve the renewal of contracts for all 32 first-year Chapter 21 employees for the 2011-2012 school year.
Thank you, Ms. Carrasco. Mr. Rodriguez.
I make a motion to revocate the board's previous decision, which was for non-renewal of certain probationary contract teachers and employees, and approve renewal of these probationary contract teachers and employees, which were 32 of the first year chapter 21 employees.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion. All right, we have a motion before the board, and it's been seconded to revoke the previous non-renewal of certain probationary contract teachers and employees and approve renewal of these probationary contract teachers and employees. Any further discussion from the board or comments? Anybody? I just want to say welcome back to our teachers and our personnel. There was, I think, a nurse or
counselor
involved in this group. That's those Chapter 21 probationary personnel. You all stood with us. One of the hardest decisions I, as a board member, had to do is to vote to do the non-renewal about a month or 2 months ago. And it was the hardest decision I've ever had to make as a board member. But I knew and I felt confident that our community would bring you back. And they have. And I want to congratulate everybody, and I want to thank everybody that, again, of those teachers, all of you that I saw out there participating in this. Thank you all very much, and we're very happy that you will be coming back to us. So anybody else have any other comments?
I'll leave it at that. I mean, first, welcome back, and I think, it was a really tough decision, believe us. We were out there in closed session for a good 2-3 hours, and, when we came out here, you could feel it in our hearts. That was one of the toughest decisions that we ever made. For me personally, especially since I've been on the board, and I'm just so grateful that through the hard work of the administration, the teachers that went out there, the students, we sent a strong message, and that's to invest in our teachers and make sure they come back. So, thank you.
All right. Well said. Anybody else? Tony, pull the board.
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Big yes.
Yes. Quintana?
Absolutely yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Absolutely yes.
Motion passes. Welcome back.
we're all going to do this together. So find your contract. Stand in front of your contract.
Welcome back, teachers. Teachers, sign those contracts!
Thank you.
32.
Okay, Sergio, I'm going to follow you for this spot. All right.
Includes the addendum item for the agenda for this meeting. Board, any comments? Just happy that everybody, that this is a great occasion. And so, again, thanks to everybody involved and to the community and to the teachers that are here. Thank you, guys. Dr. Murphy.
President, I do want to recognize we have a former assistant superintendent from Canyon-Teo here as superintendent in Region 19, Jackie Dyer, is here with us and his wife, and I just want to recognize that. Thank you for coming and participating and supporting us.
Thank you.
Dr. Murphy, Mrs. Dyer was our counselor.
Yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Dyer.
And a very good one.
All right, that takes us to the next agenda item. Tony?
Item 5 is open forum, and Jackie Dyer has signed up to speak.
Mr. Dyer.
This is what it's all about right here. This is what it is. But Aurora and I just wanted to come back and address the board and congratulate you. Congratulate everyone in Comet Hill, because you know what happened? The people stood up.
Yeah.
They stood up for what they knew what was right. And 32 teachers coming back. I try to go back in time. Of course, at my age, it's kind of difficult. I try to go back in time when I was a first, second, third year teacher and what it meant when I got to sign my name on a contract knowing that I'm going to be back next year, already thinking about what I'm going to do next year, the bulletin boards and everything. So, teachers, congratulations. Aurora and I were here. She was a counselor at Jose Damian, and I was assistant superintendent for operations in 1994. And we just wanted to come and congratulate you and be part of the celebration. And again, thank the community for having the intestinal fortitude to do what's right for children. And we just want to wish you well. God bless all of you. And I'd like to approach the board and shake your hand.
Thank you, William. Congratulations. Thank you.
Congratulations, all of you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dyer. Next person.
Next is Connie Parker.
Good evening, President Coronado, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. It's with great pride that I have a special gift to all board members. And it's a gift that was done with all our children from Canutillo Elementary and Mr. Armstrong, our music teacher. As a new administrator this school year, I have many tasks that were assigned to me, but two of the things that I wanted to achieve this school year was to build pride in our campus. And two of the things that we did, first of all, we, with the committee, PBSI committee, we established pride with our students. And one of our sayings that we say every morning to our children is, Canutillo's first, Canutillo's best. Canutillo first because we are and were the first elementary in the district. And Canutillo's best because we have the best students, teachers, staff, and parents. And obviously we hired the best four, plus the other best. I'm sure everybody else. Two are wonderful. But the second thing that I wanted us to do is have our own song that would identify us as Canutillo Elementary. So we are the first elementary to have our own song, and with the help of Mr. Armstrong and our students, Mr. Armstrong composed and wrote everything that's here and that our students are singing to y'all. So with great pride, I present to you our first CD with our first song, with Canutillo Elementary song, and No Place for Hate song, also written by Mr. Armstrong.
We hope that you enjoy it. Every note, every voice, every instrument on this CD was performed by my students and myself. So it'll be a little rough around the edges in a few places, but it's an honest effort, and we think you'll really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun to listen to.
This was also given to every mother in our Mother's Day program for every mother. So this was a gift for them, so this is a gift to y'all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for all your effort and your work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Armstrong.
Thank you.
He's quick. We almost lost him.
Thank you for.
Oh, God. You know this is going to make me cry.
This is one of the nicest gifts.
Yes, it is.
This is beautiful.
Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Tony?
Next is Lilia Maldonado.
Good evening, Ms. Maldonado.
Good evening, board members, Dr. Murphy. I'm here before you as a community member, as a parent, as a taxpayer, and as an employee. And first of all, I'd like to congratulate all 32 teachers, even though some have left. I am proud today not only of being an ex-graduate of this district, but being a resident, a community member, and an employee. I mean, I think we have the best district, and not just because of the good that's happening, but I've always felt, that's why I come always before you to give you my point of view, I think we're great. So, it's a new year. Happy New Year to everyone, right?
You know, Happy New Year.
The whole thing. But I also want to, Dr. Murphy, I want to thank you because I've always said that, and the board, I've always said that I'm a true believer of following by example. You modeled to us, and I came before you when you first came, and I mentioned how unique this community is, and I think you're beginning to see that. I also said that in order to get the best of your employees, to have the best of your district, we have to have leaders. And to be a leader, you have to be a model. And so I thank you for getting your hands dirty by marching, by being out there, by sweating. Board members, the same thing. Because it's what inspired us, part of it, to get out there and join. The other part is that we're family. We're family. That's bottom line. Here in Canutillo, what makes us unique is that we are family and we look out for each other. And so the other thing you mentioned about the vote of confidence that our community members have given us. We have those that maybe voted no, and that was their option. But even for those that voted yes, now I think it's a new beginning because we now have to not let them down. They have confided in us. They have we're opening the door and saying, okay, we want to trust you, and this is a beginning. So I think that we can't let them down. We're going to be under the microscope very much. And so there has to be unity. But by unity, I don't mean that each and every single one of you are individuals. And you have the right to vote your gut, to vote your mind. And but at the same time, there has to be unity as a team. No bickering. Do your bickering behind the doors. But come out here and be a team. Because again, we will follow by example. We will follow by what we see. The other thing too is that you said it time and time again, no transparency. Communication, key. Mm-hmm. If we want that trust, it starts with communication. Not just to the residents who work here, but to the outside people who have no children here, who don't know what is happening, only the rumors. And so communication is a key, and facts. Okay? Now, I know you all know this, but I'm just reminding you that it is a new year, and we have to start off on the right foot. And thank you, and congratulations, and welcome by 32 teachers. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Maldonado. Tony?
Jessica Hawkins Trejo. And Ms. Garza, Rio, yes, Server, and Mendoza.
Board President, Mr. Coronado, board members, Dr. Murphy, wonderful audience, Mr. Obeck, my principal. I know you mentioned that it was a hard day for you, April 14th. Well, for us, 30. Okay. There you go. For us, 32 teachers, April 15th, which was the day that we heard the news, it was a really great day. And it was a big cloud in our heads, but let me tell you, you picked the best 32 teachers to, you know, to let go or make the cut. Because none of us decided to quit. None of us decided not to come back and give us 100%. On the other hand, we all came back and said, we're not here for a contract, we're not here for the money, we're here for the children. And all those 30 some days, 20 teaching days, we all came back and gave 120% because we are here for them. We are here because we are excellent teachers. We are here because teaching is in our heart, not in a piece of paper. And we just wanted you to know that we are very grateful for all the efforts that you made, you know, to be out there and letting the community know. But more than anything, we're thank you to the community for making education a priority. The governor does not see education a priority, but Canutillo community does, and we thank you for that. I teach at Deanna Davenport, and I'm very proud of it. I never doubted that I would be here, like I told you and I told the members. I don't know why you're welcoming us back, because we never left. We were always here, and we knew we were going to continue here somehow, some way, as a tutor, however we were going to stay in Canutillo. Ms. Strobeck and Ms. Armendariz, who were the ones who gave me the news, told us, you know, since the very beginning, you will be back. We are 100% sure we're not going to lose you. And it was that support, the support from our principals, especially from Ms. Parker, you know, for them, and for every other principal in the district, and for every community member, board member, Dr. Murphy, and everybody else who were out there getting sunburned and walking those streets. And I know she deserves a bottle of right now, when the lawyer mentioned that there were some discrepancy on the boats, we want to let you know that one of those boats overseas came from one of our teachers, Ms. Carmela Lopez, who was at Davenport, and right now she's in the Middle East. She makes sure that she was registered, and she makes sure that she voted, and of course she voted for the bond and for the TRE. Some of us might be first-year teachers, some of us not so much, but we all are excellent, dedicated teachers, and you guys picked the best to give us a cut, because you made sure that we value every day that we're with the students now, and the teachers and all the students in all the Canutillo community know that no matter whether you have a 10-year contract, which we would like to have, or just a daily contract, we are here for them. And we appreciate every effort that you guys did. And now, they would like to say something.
Just thank you. I mean, I grew up in King too, and I told the media this, and I meant it from the bottom of my heart. I wasn't leaving. My heart's in King too. I grew up here. We're all a big family, as you can see. I just want to thank you guys, and Dr. Murphy, you being out there and you seeing what Canutillo is all about really meant a lot to us, so thank you.
Do you need any more points? Well, thank you for, you know, for supporting us and supporting our children, and thank you for letting us be a part of the Canutillo family, because we are really proud of them. And thank you to Ms. Barb, too.
Yes.
They said everything already, but I just want to thank you, Dr. Murphy, all his cabinet, and also my principal, and all the teachers at Canutillo Elementary School, because they were there for us, supporting us all week. They just were. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Board members, I want to thank also the community of Canutillo. I would like to especially thank Ms. Parker, my principal, and Mr. Gonzalez, my assistant principal, and all of the Canutillo elementary staff, because we are a family. And I feel very privileged. Thank you.
So on behalf of the lucky 32, we thank you for every single 900 and something votes, because we are here for you, but more than anything, we're here for our kids, and we are here to stay.
Thank you all very, very much for that presentation. Is that it for the open forum?
Yes.
All right. Thank you all very much. We'll go on to the next agenda item.
Thank you, everyone, for staying and coming. We greatly appreciate it. One more hand for Decision County.
All right, I'll defer to the board to see if you want to take up agenda item six at this time. The executive session. Huh?
No, just joking. We'll take up
seven.
Let's refer to the end and any other.
I want to do the 9F Blue Cross Blue Shield item. Y'all want to do that now? Yes.
Can we do
what
do
we for 7?
9F? 9F?
Can we do 7A, 7A, 7B, and then go to 7?
To 9F?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. With the board's consent, then, we will go at this point to agenda item 7A.
I-7A, School Health Advisory Council, annual report, Mr. Escobedo and Ms. Lavis.
Lucky 7, good evening, Board President Coronado, board members, and Dr. Murphy. I was hoping I was going to follow Mr. Baskin, that way I didn't have to adjust the microphone. But, no, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. All right. But thank you for having us here tonight. This is a great year to be a part of the Canutillo family with the whole TRE and the bond. It is great. My son actually starts Garcia Elementary next year, so having our teachers there is awesome. Tonight, we actually have an annual report, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about what the Shack has done throughout the year. The Shack has been great this year. What you have to remember about the Shack, the School Health Advisory Council, is that it's made up of volunteers. These are people and parents, staff members, the kids, the children of each of the staff members, and also the parents that come and dedicate and sacrifice their time has been huge for us. In a little while, we'll discuss what we've done for the entire year. But I do want to give a hand to our Shack members who are here supporting our cause on their own time. So thank you. Can you please rise up and quick round of applause? Very dedicated group, so thank you guys. In a couple of seconds, we're going to start our presentation, and the presentation is going to be conducted by our chair, Ms. Joan Lattis. She has been a great leader for us in the work of the Shack, in the dedication that she has done, and she's a great advocate for our children. And when you look at the Shack and some of the things that we look at the health, the nutrition. We also look at the human sexuality portion in a couple of other items that you'll see in a little while. But she has been great for our district, and we're glad to let you know that we have her for another year under our bylaws. So that's good. Thank you. Without further ado, can we please have Joe Lambs please start the presentation?
First of all, I want to say it's a great day for a child in the Canutillo School District. As a parent, it's just overwhelming, so thank you. It has been an honor to serve with the people that are here and the other people that are part of the Shack, the outstanding support and the dedication as a volunteer organization. And wait till you see the number of meetings and things we've been able to accomplish, so thank you. I trust all of you have received our report and had a chance to review it. The first thing that I want to talk to you about is what we're required legally. So the board shall establish a local school health advisory council to assist the district in ensuring that the local community values and health issues are reflected in the district's health education instruction. The second portion is essentially Shack is involved in the institutional time commitment for health education and overseeing the instruction relating to human sexuality. And I hope that you will be as pleased as I have been to serve as the chair of the accomplishment that we have been able to do in a year. First of all, we meet here It shows that our parents and our staff, how important SHAC is, the School Health Advisory. We have held 5 meetings. We meet on Monday from 4 to 6. We've had 2 subcommittees. We have health and wellness. We have met an additional 5 meetings. We have met for human sexuality an additional 6 meetings. The MAP is 16 meetings for a volunteer organization. I think that's pretty outstanding. This is in addition to their regular duties as employees and their regular duties as parents and as in their employees. Our SHAC membership, in the report, we shared with you the number of parents that have been involved, the number of staff that have been involved. We have an active recruitment going on. We are going to go to the open house next year, and we're going to continue with recruitment through school teacher conferences so that we can get more parents involved. And that was on page 2, by the way, of your thing. We worked diligently on our bylaws. We worked on them, and then we had to revise them a little bit to meet our needs, and I think that was outstanding. We even met an additional meetings for that on a Friday even, so I thought that was pretty cool. So it came to a total of about 20 meetings, okay, total. So if you remember, we were awarded a SHAC award for characteristics of an effective SHAC. We were one of 16 recipients. The funds were allocated to the health teachers at 4 of our campuses. They were asked to use their creativity to enhance the students' knowledge on health issues. The high school chose video camera and did commercials. The middle school created posters on fitness, nutrition, and alcohol prevention. The outcome ideal, it really demonstrated the sustainability of these type of efforts. And had really long-term benefits for the students and the district. When we were looking, one of our initiatives, we wanted to look at our wellness policy. And we found that it was very, it was excellent. It was detailed, it was comprehensive, and it was geared towards really improving the health of the students and the faculty as well, and the employees. Yet it was a little difficult to evaluate. So what we did was we started reviewing it, and then here comes the Healthy Hunger Free Act of 2010. So we decided to hold off because we knew that would also impact. And we put that on our list for next year. So that's one of the first things we'll look at. We also took a look at the Brain and Mode Foundation. We got involved in this mid-April. Late in the game, quite frankly, because if you remember, you probably saw the billboards. The run was last week on the 15th, May 15th. This is a healthy fundraiser. We want to encourage more of these types of fundraising efforts. But not only was it healthy, it involved parents and students working together to do healthy activities, which is really what supports the SHAC's goals, or our goals as a group. What also was attractive about the Brain and Mode Foundation was they have a free shoe giveaway. Although we don't know what the requirements are for a school to be selected for that, we're hoping that one day we will be able to get in there with the mix. We registered 30-plus registrants, which is less than 50. So what we did was we made the first tier. That meant money is coming back to our district. And it will be allocated to the schools that, based on the enrolled number of students, parents, they enroll, teachers, faculty, things like that. So we're real, real thrilled about that. The last thing that I wanted to talk to you about, well, not the last thing, but the last thing under the health and wellness, is our effort to have recess before lunch. I don't know how familiar you are with that, but the research is outstanding of the benefits. The children eat their lunch instead of throw it away so they can rush outside to play. They're more alert in the afternoon. They have fewer visits to the nurse saying they have stomach aches. Stomach aches because they haven't eaten, they're hungry. The other portion is less discipline problems. From an operational standpoint, there is less waste. One of the schools in our area, with a 600 enrollment plus, not in our district, but in our area, went from 13 bags of trash down to 5. That's food that's going inside the students. That's good. The other thing is we were very aware of the obstacles that the that would be involved with doing such an effort, scheduling, logistics of washing hands, and things like that. We have some schools that are already on this program, three. Garcia, Davenport, and Bill Childress. They have different models that they use. For example, logistically, they use water to wash the children's hands. Some use hand sanitizers. So we have three models that the other two schools that we're recommending to go on to this program will be consulted with. And if those aren't the right answers for the additional schools, then Jose and I are committed to finding another school that may have some other operational issues that need to be looked at. We are thrilled about the benefits to our district for this. The human sexuality piece, our initiatives where we wanted to expand our current program. If you remember in your booklet that you received from us, it outlined the different programs that are there. We wanted to create a menu of programs that our schools could basically call upon based on the school's individual needs. We wanted to encompass a broad range of topics as well. The committees reviewed these several times, as I said earlier, and it was approved, what we're recommending, both by the subcommittee as well as the SHAC as a whole. The Canutio staff believe that it meets the current needs of the target population that we're trying to reach, so that they will have, because knowledge is power, and we feel that we wanted to provide accurate information for our children to make healthy life choices. The other thing is we also believe that the knowledge that the students will gain will help to tackle the barriers of graduating on time, okay, that prevent that. The programs are not new. What we are suggesting is that we utilize the services of the department, El Paso Department of Health. They are skilled, they are knowledgeable subject experts, and these programs that they will be involving hopefully in our district are programs that are offered in the other districts in our area. If you remember from your the report that we sent to you, we want to start with pre-K through kinder and through to fourth grade. But we want to talk to the children about respecting themselves, about taking care of their bodies, about basic hygiene and safety and keeping themselves safe. I understand that some of the parents in our group have experience. There's a great program that the Department of Health deals with puppets, and about how important the care of your teeth are and so on and so forth. We want to move forward with that into fifth grade currently we use Always Changing. It's a one session for 45 minutes approximately. The nurses do it, or the health teachers, or the coaches. There's various things that are done, but those are staff people. We want to be able to use the Department of Public Health. They have the same curriculum. They call it growth and development. They use the same video, the same lesson plan, and again, it's one session, 45 minutes. I think that would complement our programs we already have. We want to also move on to sixth grade. Right now there's health and fitness on a limited basis. We want to increase that to the teens and sex program, which is a one session for 45 to 90 minutes. We also are encouraging the parent component, which is how to talk to your children about sexuality. It is one session, 45 to 90 minutes. For seventh and eighth graders, we have game plan abstinence program. And we want to also encourage choices two should know. It is five to six sessions, 45 minutes to 90 minutes. Again, the same parent component, how to talk to your children about sexuality. Keep in mind that all of these programs throughout them, the Department of Public Health, we have seen the programs. They always, always encourage abstinence as the safest form of protection. The high school program, the 9th through 12th, we have Navigator. It's abstinence and decision-making program. It is about 8 to 10 lessons, 45 minutes each. We are encouraging the new program to be added to it, commonly sexually transmitted diseases, STD 101 for non-clinicians. one session, 45 to 90 minutes. I think this would complement our programs that we already have in existence, and I think it would give the information that the students need to make healthy choices for themselves. The last thing I want to talk to you about, some of the miscellaneous things that we've been working on. We have the parent recruitment. We have, and I talked to you about that, we have attended some Region 19 conferences. We've, Jose and I and some of the staff have attended some of the TETN's webinars on all the different topics that have gone on. We've attended all of them, other than the one that we froze out of. Jose and I were involved with the Partnership for Healthy Texas. I belong to Texas Cares for Children. And we were invited to go to Austin to talk to the legislature about the different types of legislation that was being proposed. It was expense paid for us. We were the only two selected from El Paso. So it was a great honor to do that. Some of the topics that we talked to the legislation about were safe roads to schools, and that's a buzzword now, and all the developments that are going on in the area and the future developments. The return to the health credit, even though we as a district have made a wise choice to continue. But we, you know, there's a lot of things that we talked about. I won't go into all of them, but we hit them all, right, Jose? We attended a gang awareness that was for educators, very interesting, very enlightening. We revised the parent permission form for the human sexuality in the orientation packet and made it more appropriate for elementary schools children. And we had our planning retreat, and we have lots of great things scheduled for next year to be continued. We have already on our wellness policy, we ordered some new human sexuality materials that were free of charge, that had some pretty nice price tags on it, so we're hoping we'll receive those. And then we want to focus more on getting the students involved, and we have some great ideas on how we'll do that next year. As I said, we have a website, and all of our minutes of our meetings are on there. And it is, as again, I can't tell you, it's been an honor to serve with these people. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Ms. Ives and Mr. Escoilo. Any questions or comments from the board? All right, thank you all very much. Thank you. Enjoyed the presentation.
You know, in closing, I would definitely like to thank our leadership. We're only as good as the support we get, and that includes our board, our superintendent, all our cabinet leaders. Our administrators have been phenomenal. My student support division, my boss, Ms. Avendariz, thank you for the support. And we will commit to doing what's best for our students. And so that's our commitment. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I did put in an application to join the SHAC on the state level, so I'll be looking forward to hearing what that happens. Dr. Murphy said when he first came here, he wanted people to think of Coronado, Franklin, and Canyatillo. Well, I want them to think of Dallas, Fort Worth, and Canyatillo.
Thank you all very much for that presentation. All right, board, with your consent, I'd like to see if we could take up agenda item 9F at this time. Mm-hmm. All right.
Item 9F, consider extension of current district administrative services agreement with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. Ms. Carrasco?
Board President Coronado, board members, and Dr. Murphy. Before I start out, I'd like to formally introduce a new employee to the Human Resources Division. Mario Carmona, here to my left, is the new employee benefits specialist, and he started in January. So I know most everybody has met him, but I wanted to formally introduce him to you tonight.
Welcome, Mario.
Welcome.
We're here before you because we've got some recommendations that we would like to recommend as far as our health benefits, which is through Blue Cross Blue Shield. And we had a health benefits committee meeting on May 3rd, and we discussed with the committee some of those options that were before us at that point. And tonight, Mr. McGraw with Crest Benefits is here to give us an update on our health plan. Some of the recommendations, and I'm going to mention them briefly, and then Mr. McGraw will go ahead and give you that update of the plan and explain further those recommendations that we would like to implement. We have a one-year extension still with Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is what the committee, based on everything that we want to do, that is our recommendation that we would like to move forward with. However, as I said, we will have a further explanation of that. But what we want to do is extend with Blue Cross Blue Shield the agreement for 16 months. And we'll, and then we also want to begin a new plan year effective January 1st. And we also want to implement a 30-day waiting period. So these options here that I just mentioned to you are the recommendations that we want to bring forth. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. McGraw so he can go through his update and we'll discuss these further.
Hey, good evening, Board President Coronado, members of the board.
Mr. McGraw, welcome.
Dr. Murphy, members of the audience. It's been a long time since I've been in such a happy board meeting. I'm excited for you and applaud your taxpayers, too, for having the wisdom to invest in the future. That's fantastic.
Sure is.
So, as Ms. Crosco said, I'll go through the essentially the same presentation that we reviewed with the committee. We've actually been we review with the committee in the district on a regular basis, but this is a project that's essentially been going on since March. So essentially we'll go through the update on the performance of the plan. We'll look at the forecasting for the future, make a few comments about health care reform. There's some provisions related to health care reform that you do need to implement come September the 1st. And then, you know, just a quick discussion on the recommendations that the committee came forward with. So, and I think you should have this presentation in your hand as well. This is just a graphical illustration of the medical claims that have been paid by month for the last 2 years and year to date through your current plan year. Currently, your plan year is in sync with your formal fiscal year, which runs from September through August. And it's been actually discussed for a little over a year whether to change the plan year and have it coincide with a calendar year, which is what Mrs. Crosby was referring to. And that's part of the recommendation going forward. But you can see just from the visual image that this year the overall claims paid each month are significantly less than they were in the prior year. And actually, in your history with Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you're entering into the fifth year of your original contract with them. And the rates and benefits have been very stable with the exception of 2 years back. There needed to be some adjustments made. And you can see, you know, because of the claims activity, why. But, you know, to kind of jump to the end, there's no recommendation to change the benefits or increase the rates either to the district or the employees for the next 16 months, you know, assuming you adopt the recommendation. So in other words, everything remains the same all the way through December 31 of 2012. And essentially, other than 2 years back, your rates and benefits have been very stable. You really have outperformed all of your neighbors in the market in your experience. 2 years ago, the district introduced two additional plans. Historically, you've offered two plans, which you've referred to as the basic and the standard plan. And you also now have, I'm sorry, you have the basic and the premium. Now you've been 2 years ago into the standard and the distributor of the health plan. So this table just shows you the enrollment by total members. And members can be employees or dependents that are enrolled in each plan. And it shows you in this current fiscal year or in this current plan year the percentage of the people in each category and the percentage of dollars consumed by them. And it's going to vary, you know, as things happen, you know, during the course of life, things are going to float up and down. But you can see that everything is kind of falling into place, that all things considered, the ratio of members to dollars spent is starting to equal out. I know when plans were first introduced, it was a little bit lopsided. But over time, people have made different decisions on their enrollment elections. A quick note on the large claimants, because that drives a lot of the cost. And what we have on this chart here on the right-hand side, those are the large claims that were incurred by the plan in the past plan year. And in the middle is the current plan year. If you look at the blue color coded, those are individuals that carried over from one year to the next. You can also see just below the blue section of the chart that last year your large claimants accounted for 38% of all the dollars spent. So far it's 20%. So that's good news. There's less catastrophic claims activity that's happening within the plan. If you also notice on the line label number 4 that's green on the chart, last year there were $887,000 reimbursed to the district under your reinsurance contract. And so far year to date, there's $127,000. And this data is based on claims data through March. There's about a 30 to 40 day lag time. We'll be getting your April figures in just a couple of days. But we do track your invoices. We're not anticipating any surprises as far as that goes. This chart here gives you an illustration of the what we call the average per member per month cost over the last 3 years. So the table on the x-axis is a 12-month time period that runs from September through August. The yellow line is the fiscal year that went, or the plan year from 08 to 09. The blue line is 9 to 10, and the red line is 10 to 11. So you can see that it's fairly stable over time in measuring the unit cost for total people that are enrolled into the plan. Now, as you're very well aware, you've had some decline in your overall enrollment over the years just due to your fiscal constraints, but the cost per unit has stayed fairly constant. Another graphical representation illustrates the cost per category by relationship. So the blue line toward the bottom is the average cost of children under the plan. The light blue line, the blue line in the middle is the average cost of employees. And the yellow line, which you can see does slope rather dramatically upward as it moves across to the right, is the cost of claims on spouses. And that's not unusual because the spouse category has the fewest overall number of people. It doesn't take too many large claimants in that category to make that average cost go up. And this is, in fact, a category, too, where so a lot of the reinsurance reimbursements happen. So this is illustrating the gross cost. The red line down toward the bottom is the average cost of all members together. I get excited about weird things, but this is one that I'm happy to see, too. Now we take the data, we break it out by the enrollment in each of the plan designs. So you can see in September of 09, when the two new plans were introduced, the data kind of jumps around as you wait for the pipeline of information to fill up. But essentially, when the board approved the plan designs in September of 09, the original recommendation was to implement a consumer-driven health plan. And the board at the time wanted to also add another plan that didn't have such a high deductible. So those two plans were designed with the intent that they were about equal in value, and both of those plans are available to employees at no cost. The district pays the full cost of both of those plans. So over time, the consumer-driven plan, which has the highest deductible, actually had a higher level of cost until things leveled out. But you can see as they approach March of 2011, the cost is right in sync with each other, which I think means that overall, the district, your committee, with our help, has properly designed the plan and funded it so that it is a break-even proposition. The employees can decide, do I want to pay a little bit more each month to cover my dependents or not and take on the higher deductible. Either way, it was intended to be a break-even proposition in terms of total cost to the employee, and it appears that it's stabilizing.
Through the chair, can you, with your red pointer, kind of run us through that?
Sure. So the consumer-driven plan is this one here. And it jumped up right away. Right after the implementation of it, you had some members that had some catastrophic claims. But the blue line is the standard plan that has the $1,700 deductible. And so the intent was that they would be equal in cost or value. And it took a while for them to converge, but they converged a few months ago, and now they're staying in the same category. It wasn't unusual. The premium plan was the highest cost plan. That's the one with the lowest deductibles and co-pays and out-of-pockets. Consequently, it has the highest contribution on a monthly basis through payroll deductions. But when the change was implemented in September of 2009, you had people migrate from this plan. The majority of them went to the basic plan. And then, I'm sorry, I'm calling by their name. They're premium to basic. But the majority of these people migrated to here, so we anticipated that this line would go up. They actually met, but this plan, because it's richer in benefits, should show a higher average cost than that one. So they're actually starting to fall in line right where you anticipate them to be. The following charts just track the pace of inflation on each plan. I can tell you one of the things that we're noticing, and you notice there's a comment at the top that says it's currently at 10%. And this line does bounce around. It doesn't subtract out on any of the reimbursements that you've had from your reinsurance. That's what makes it look a little more dramatic on the chart. But at this point right now, it's experiencing about a 10% pace of inflation over the prior year, but you can see that it's been dropping. And the good news is we're noticing on all of our clients, whether they're in the El Paso area or other parts of Texas or in the other regions here in the Southwest, we're noticing a decline in the overall trend. And we're hearing back from a lot of the insurance carriers that we do business with that they're noticing a similar decline. So that's good because it means that overall, for the medical costs, not counting prescription drugs, over the next year, they're expecting less inflationary pressure. So that will be beneficial to all consumers across all market categories. This is a measure of your average prescription drug cost. And you can see that after the implementation in September 2009, the average drug cost went down. Part of the changes back then involved some changes in the copays offered to all plans. And so it was anticipated that it would drop because there was some cost shifting that occurred where the employees and the dependents shared a higher level of cost for co-pays, but over time you can see the pressure of inflation is pushing it back up. Prescription drugs are not showing a decline in inflation over time like the medical costs is doing. This chart was really more just for the benefit of the committee, but it's a recap of how the prescription drugs spend. That's your highest claim activity, how it falls within the various plans. And then also a look at what your highest cost drivers are or your most expensive drugs that are being consumed on a regular basis. And one of the things that we remarked upon, and historically, you see a lot of antidepressants in this top list for public sector clients, and you don't have any antidepressants in the top 10, so that's good. Your people are out there working hard and not having to take drugs while they're at work. This is the forecast here, and as you can see, there's two columns. The column in the middle is your current plan year, and as it's set up right now, it's set the forecast for another consecutive 12 months. But the key things are that we're actually being very conservative, but the bottom line, lower right-hand column says no rate increases needed to continue to operate the plan beyond your targets. It does include a 15% trend for inflation. Even though it's reflecting 10 right now, it's early in the year. You tend to have more large payments and elective surgeries that happen in the summer. So we didn't want to back off of that assumption. We want to be conservative. And we have been looking at these charts since March, actually, so that was based on data in January. The last thing we wanted to do was come up with a real aggressive forecast or recommendation and then come here in May and get surprised by late-breaking information. So it has a 15% assumption for inflation, and next year it's at 9. The industry forecast is that by next year it should fall to 7. So even with these conservative assumptions for inflation, the forecast still calls for no increase in the funding, which also means that unless you just wanted to, there's no need to change any of the benefits. The administrative fees for Blue Cross and Blue Shield have already been negotiated. assuming you approve the recommendation, where they would remain constant compared to last year, all the way through December of 2012. The reinsurance costs, on the other hand, there is an increase in that it would go from $472,000 to $666,000. And if you recall that slide prior where the green line, it showed that last year $887,000 was reimbursed to the district. So this current year's premium is $472,000. Last year's premium was even lower. So in other words, Blue Cross absorbed some pretty heavy losses through KUTO ISD. So far year to date it's at $127,000. There are a couple of changes due to health care reform that we're incorporating into the forecast. One of them is the removal of lifetime maximum benefits. So currently your plan has a $2 million lifetime maximum benefit, and due to the health care reform on September the 1st, you have to increase, or you have to change that to no limit, unlimited lifetime benefits. Your reinsurance contract currently allows or only obligates the carrier to reimburse you up to $2 million. And you don't have to buy an unlimited reinsurance contract, but we don't think that it's worth the relative risk for you to take on unlimited liability if you did encounter a claim that went above that threshold. So the change in the policy accommodates the unlimited lifetime liability plus the inflationary trends, and those again are the rates that are, it's actually a staggered strategy. First one is to carry you from September through December of this year, and then also from December till January, or through, from January through December of 2012. And that's all for, built into the forecast. The target level of money that is optimal to have in your fund as a reserve for next year is $1.2 million. We anticipate that you'll start the year at about $1.8 million, and therefore there's no need to make any changes. And that's the, you know, the recap of the forecast. These are the criteria that you do have to comply with under health care reform effective September the 1st. So in addition to you know, changing the waiting period, like Ms. Carrasco said, these are the only changes that would be made to the plan, and these are only because you have to. And essentially, they're all good as well, in that children under the age, or the definition of a dependent child has to increase to the age of 26, regardless of their marital status. Also, children under the age of 19 cannot have a pre-existing condition applied to them, and rescissions are prohibited. That's a low-level thing that may happen, just basically means unless there's outright fraud, someone who applies for coverage under the plan, you can't go and deny them coverage at a later date once they're enrolled. And then the last one is the removal of any lifetime maximum benefits. So those you have to comply with. So now we met with your purchasing department, Dr. Murphy, of course the benefits staff, also had some discussions with your attorney to make sure that any of these recommendations were permissible under your purchasing guidelines, etc. But now we'll go through the scenarios that were discussed. Because again, the contract that you have with Blue Cross has one remaining year on it. But the intention was to, at one stage, was to investigate whether to change the plan year to match with your fiscal year or to do it to January the 1st. And a large part of the discussion around that related to every year school starts late August, beginning of September. And that's also when the plan renews, which means that during August or late July, you're holding open enrollment, and it's just a really busy time here at the district. You've got new people coming in, you're getting ready for the start of school, and it's always a real pressure crunch. By changing the plan year to the calendar year, it does a couple of things. It syncs up your flexible benefit plans, your elections under your health saving account, your accumulation of deductibles and out-of-pockets, and it puts them on the same time frame as your tax year, which helps simplify your decisions and your you know, your elections and how you dovetail that into your overall strategy, you know, trying to maximize the value of your tax favor provisions of all your different benefit plans. Second thing is, by moving the anniversary or the open enrollment date to late November, December, Granted, you're coming up toward the end of the school year. You've got some Thanksgiving holidays or people thinking about, you know, the Christmas break, etc. But it's not as a frantic a time as it is in September and trying to enroll people as they're coming back to work.
Randy, what about the first-year teachers or new employees in August? What happens to them?
Well, they're enrolled under the plan right now. Or here's how the transition would work as it's been proposed. And I'll just go ahead and jump to the recommendation from the committee, too. So, you know, there's a couple things that need to happen. Right now, your benefits are structured where every September and the 30 days prior to that is open enrollment. So this September, there will be an open enrollment, and new employees can enroll or existing employees can change their elections, move from plan to plan, add or drop dependents without having to have a qualifying event. And then at the same time, the proposal, the recommendation is that historically your deductible or your out-of-pocket maximums would start over on September the 1st. But the process or the thought process is we don't want to start everything over in September and then 4 months later say, surprise, we'll start all over again in January. So the recommendation is that we would extend the current year's accumulation of deductibles or out-of-pocket maximums and just stretch that all the way to December of this year. So that come September, you don't have to start over. You kind of get like a 4 month extension on the benefits and the maximums you've already accumulated. But everybody will have the opportunity to enroll on September the 1st or move back and forth from new employees and existing employees alike. Then on January the 1st, we'll have another open. And that open enrollment will be the one that sets your elections for the following 12 months through calendar year 2012. And then from that time on, you'll have an annual open enrollment, you know, at the tail end of each calendar year.
But then again, what about the, as you get new teachers at the beginning of each year in August?
Right. Whenever you have a new employee, they're eligible to enroll once they've met the waiting period, which is part of the proposal, this 30-day waiting period. So that happens whether it's open enrollment or any time during the year. But it's important to note that it's the first of the month after the 30 days. So you know, just because you're enrolled in August doesn't mean you start September 1. You count 30 days and you're the first of the month.
Sure. So at this point, I was handled, there's no waiting period. New hires, from their date of hire, they become eligible to enroll the first of the following month. So that's one of the recommendations, that we implement that 30-day waiting period so we can have that time frame to be able to work with the employee. There's two key items that we look at. First one is a premium. Premiums must be paid as the benefit becomes available. So at this point, if you have an employee that's hired, let's say the 20th of the month, if they're becoming eligible the 1st of June, then I can pretty much tell you that during the orientation, we informed the employee that pretty much behind in premiums because there's no waiting period that's being implemented at this point. So the waiting period will allow for them to gain some earnings for that lapse of the 10 days for the first month they're in, and the 30-day waiting period, allowing them to become effective the 1st of the following month, in that case meaning July 1st. So it's a benefit towards the employee, because again, being a new hire, last thing I want to make them aware of is that, by the way, the first check is going to be a double deduction. So I think it's a good recommendation.
And then also it allows time for them to actually have an identification card that works. You know, if the coverage begins on the day they are hired, there's a lag time before they can actually prove to anyone or go to the pharmacy. They eventually get reimbursed, but this allows everything to be done proactively as opposed to retroactively.
So that means that the rates are not increasing right now?
Correct.
Will remain as is for until December 2012, right, if we decide to extend. Okay, and then the 30-day waiting period. If a current employee wants to add dependents, there's still a waiting period?
No, actually any recommendation will become effective September 1st. So if we implement a 30-day waiting period will be effective as of September 1st. Anything that we have in place will be due up to August 31st.
The waiting period only applies to a new employee. And so once an employee is already here, if they don't elect to enroll their employees or their dependents during the open enrollment, then during the course of the year, it requires a qualifying event in order for the door to open for them to add a dependent. So they may have covered their dependents under a spouse, but if the spouse loses a job or loses coverage or there's a divorce or marriage or birth, then you're able to add your dependents during the year without any waiting period. But it is important that they do it within 30 days of the qualifying event.
Great news. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Chairman.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Randy, on the last time we, I guess it was last year when we gave that year extension, we looked at going from the back end. They wanted to increase the price on, I guess, the administrative cost from the back end.
You had a lengthy debate on the administrative fees, correct?
Okay, and then what they supplemented was through the prescription drugs. Is that correct? Or some the pharmacy plan or something?
There are two components, and this is something that can be reviewed in the RFP process, which we'll talk about, what we'll do during the next year to get ready for the expiration of the contract. But the provisions of the contract you have with Blue Cross and Blue Shield right now allow or include a credit for rebates received from pharmaceutical manufacturers. So each year during the course of the year, based on which drugs people consume, the pharmaceutical industry pays rebates back to Blue Cross's pharmacy benefit manager, and they in turn have the opportunity to pass those back to you. So one fashion or one approach is to wait for the rebate to come in, and then you get it passed back to you, but that takes about 6 to 9 months after time period they measure before you get the money. Your contract with Blue Cross, they advance you the credit of the rebate against your administrative fee. That way you get it without having to wait for it. But whenever you go through an RFP, and as we do for all of our clients, we measure whichever approach. If it's important for you to have the money up front and not wait on it, then we'll take the rebate as a credit against your administrative fee. If it's marginally better for you to wait, but that would mean that you pay more up front, and then you wait to get more money in the future. But you're waiting about 6 to 9 months before you see that money come in. The issue with that, too, is that rebates are paid on brand name pharmaceutical drugs. Those are the most expensive. Most plans provide a lot of information to try to move people to generics whenever they're possible. And there are a lot of drugs that will be rolling off their patent protection in the next 2 years. So if it just depends on what the consumption pattern of your employees is. If you're willing to pay a higher administrative fee, banking on rebates, and then your utilization pattern shifts and everybody buys generic, well, that's good, but you're not going to get as many rebates back. When you take the rebate credit up front, basically the carrier assumes the risk for the fluctuation in the utilization pattern. But technically, administrative fees have moved around, but so have the rebates. The cost of prescription drugs, as you see on the slide, have gone up. And as they go up, the pharmaceutical industry pays more rebates out. But our approach, and each client is up to, it's up to them to make their decision in the end. Our approach is you don't want to get sucked into the rebate game. I mean, you don't really want to go out and buy a car because they're giving you a rebate. You want to buy a car at the right price and not get caught up between sticker price and how much you're going to get me back. You'd just rather know what's the price going to be and don't make me pay you more so they give me more back later. Just charge me a fair price for the year.
And I guess the second question I have on the outlook of the inflationary cost when it comes to prescription drugs and the decrease or the outlook that we're looking at in administrative fees is slowly declining, or we're seeing a trend that it's not increasing. It's not, the inflationary is not as what is projected. Is that correct?
I would say that we're noticing and we anticipate an overall decline in the pace of inflation on the cost of the medical care itself, like hospitals, physicians, durable medical equipment, outpatient surgeries, imaging, things like that. It's my own belief that you'll see the same inflation pressure on prescription drugs, and I would attribute that primarily to Medicare reimbursement strategies. In the Medicare world in 2011, there's a great deal of celebration, I guess, in healthcare reform, and that as senior citizens go through what's called the coverage gap, or it's more commonly referred to as the donut hole. So people that are on Medicare and they have a prescription benefit, there's a gap in coverage where they're responsible for about $1,700 worth of the expense. Part of the healthcare reform said, you know, that the pharmaceutical manufacturers have to give 50% of that cost back in a rebate. And my attitude is that the pharmaceutical industry isn't known for their benevolence. They're actually a very profitable industry across the board. So as they divert monies and use it to subsidize Medicare, that means they have to get it from the people that actually pay for it. So I don't see the same decline in inflation on the cost of prescription drugs that are paid through employer health plans. I think those will hold steady. They might even go up a little bit because there's a big transfer of money coming from one sector to the other through the healthcare reform of Medicare.
And I guess my question, looking at the short-term and the long-term outlook of that, what are we looking at? Are we looking to see that jump back up? Because if that's the case, if it's a 6 month to 6 to 18 months, is that, or 6 months to
16 months from this
16 months, and then so it's 4 additional months to that contract.
Well,
so,
and that's one of the reasons why we didn't back off of the trend assumptions that we have included in there. So even though the medical is currently running at about 10%, we're using 15 overall for medical and prescription drug combined. That gives you a little bit of an extra cushion in case there's some inflationary pressure, you don't get caught short during the next 16 months.
And so, over the, let's say, when it comes to next year, what are we looking at? Are we looking at that trend to continue to go that way, or are we looking at possibly a spike?
Well, it's already assumed that it could increase up to 15%. So that's already
being conservative. That's,
yeah, and hopefully it will come in less, which will lead to no need to change benefits or charge more money to either the district or the employees in the future.
Ms. Gonzalez?
No, when he finishes.
Go ahead.
Does this affect at all our calendar year, fiscal year now, at all?
Okay. We're looking at switching it to our fiscal year, correct?
Or switching our calendar,
calendar year. To coincide with the tax.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was asking. Does
with the tax year. So, with respect to how that works with your fiscal year, actually, I mean, there's pros and cons of any time period that you have. And that, you know, one of the good things I like, and there's, we, you know, there are other districts that use a January through December time frame that have switched to the July through June fiscal year. But what that does is that really gives you 2 points in time, 6 months apart, where you can make a decision that has an impact on the plan. So right now, as you're preparing to go forward in your next fiscal year, it covers that entire time span to say there's no more money needed from the district, no more money needed from employees. If things are changing, you know, although right now this is recommended to go all the way through December, but as you approach your next fiscal year in July, then you'll be able to see same information updated, and you can make an early decision in, during your budget process to adopt appropriate strategy. If things are not in balance with your strategy come December, you can tweak your benefit plan to help balance it out. So instead of trying to make all your decisions at one time and hope they span a 12-month time period, you've got 2 times where you can make a decision. July, you make a decision on what's the district going to contribute. Or January, you can make a decision on what's the benefit going to look like or what's the employee going to contribute. So it actually gives you more flexibility over the course of time.
Well, and I understand what you're saying, but I think it's two different issues here.
Okay.
Because it comes out of two different, it will come out of two different line items when it comes to paying, no?
Well,
But we will be budgeting, come July 1st, we will be budgeting the district's allocation for the 12 months. And so it would just be recurring, and we'll just fall into the January 1st.
Okay. And our open enrollment for the employees will come in November, December, to prepare for a January 1st start.
And then July? It would be a new budget year, no?
Yes, and that's why he's saying that it gives us the opportunity to look at it, at the plan, at two different intervals.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Mr. Rodriguez?
Was a committee and four recommendation?
Yes, it was unanimous.
15, unanimous.
It was unanimous. All the committee members approved the recommendations that were being made. We did explain in detail that for this year we would have two enrollment periods. We did also, and Randy, you might want to explain how it's going to affect those employees that are on the consumer-driven plan and for the 4 months, you know, what we need to tweak there.
Yes, so the only plan that, and this will be heavily informed and educated to the employees during the open enrollment election. Because the consumer-driven plan is associated with a health saving account, and those have certain tax-preferred benefit strategies that they're governed by the IRS, under that one, we can't extend the deductible period from September through December. So all the employees that are under that plan will inform them that if you take it, that one does have to start over come January. The other three don't. The other three will extend all the way through December of this year and start anew in January. So they get like an extra 4 months. But there's no way to circumvent the Internal Revenue Code on the tax favor treatment of health saving account, because that's based on the deductible and the tax year. And that's another reason why moving this plan year to the calendar year will put that deductible on the same basis as the tax year, and you won't have that issue in the future. So, I mean, it's almost, you know, an opportunity to game the system. If you know you were going to have no claims, then you might take that plan because it's the lowest cost plan. If you're anticipating some activity, you'd have an opportunity to migrate to one of the other plans during that 4 month stretch, and then move back to the plan. So, you know, and that's just, there's no way to get around that during the transition. But we'll make sure during the enrollment and educational process that all the people that are under that plan or that are considering that plan are aware of it. So they have an opportunity to make the decision twice. And whereas this presentation is primarily relating to the medical benefit plan, same, you do have a flexible spending account where employees can set money aside, and that plan will also migrate to the same calendar year. So there'll be also two opportunities for employees to make decisions, and it will be important that they're properly educated too, that you're only electing to set aside money for 4 months in this period from September through December, and then come January, you can make another decision. The flexible spending account plan, again, governed by the IRS, as a use it or lose it provision. So, well, you know, your employees want to be especially careful to not set aside too much money in the short transition of the flexible spending account. But the committee's aware of that, HR and the benefits department aware of that, and that will be stressed heavily during the education enrollment process of everyone's options.
Mr. Chair, just a couple more questions. Just on, so we're not going to see an increase on anything from the administrative side from We're staying the same plan. We're just rolling it an extra year, right?
Extra 16 months, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 16 months. The second question, you're looking at for us to finish out the year for a couple of months, and do we have any major claims that we're looking at that are being held right now? Or?
No, as of right now, there don't appear to be any claims that are lurking behind the scenes.
So if we continue to see the same trend next year, hopefully at a lower level, then it would probably be a better outlook.
Yes. I mean, it's great. You have to plan for the worst and hope for the best. You don't want anybody to have a catastrophic claim. But we built in assumptions based on their patterns in the past years to anticipate that you might Most of the time, those claims don't happen until the summertime, or they kind of stack up during the course of the year. But a catastrophe or unexpected event can happen at any time.
And is there any of these that might go into a stop loss where?
You do currently have one. Your top payment right now is already over the reinsurance limit. So top payment has incurred through March, $227,000. And you've received the difference between that and $100,000. So you've already been reimbursed $127,000 back. That claim, it won't cost you any more money through the end of August. You've got these four, and you know, with the committee, we reviewed a higher level of detail on diagnosis and prognosis. But they asked, you know, and you've got to respect everybody's personal health information and privacy. So with the data's available, but we're not displaying here in the open meeting. But the information is provided to the district.
And Mr. Chair, the last question, Mr. Baskins, on, I know this is our last extension on it. Going, it would be a full extension, which would be 12 months. What is the ramifications of going with 16 months, and are we able to?
I don't know. I wasn't, this is the first time I've seen this particular recommendation. I wasn't committee. Tell me when it ends, right? Yeah, it's been
the contract, well, actually, it's been about 3 or 4 months, but the contract would expire August, or the last contractual provision that we have right now would expire August 31 of 2012.
And the intent is to start the RFP process and be ready by January 1 of 2013?
Correct, yeah. In our email exchange back in February and March, you indicated it was permissible. Both parties agreed to extend it for the additional 4 months.
That's right, I'm sorry.
And Blue Cross Blue Shield did agree after that.
I had forgotten about that. All we're going to be doing is extending it while we go through the RFP process. It's not a problem because if we didn't get the RFP done in time anyway, we'd have to do the same thing. It's not like we're evading the bidding laws. We aren't going to comply with it. We're just restructuring our year to a calendar basis. So it'll be okay. I forgot Mandy and I exchanged emails.
You're going to be a minor heart
attack. Well, Andy, it's been 3 months.
I know. There's a lot of that's happened.
And basically, you were the first order to check that out with you before we proceeded.
I had forgotten all about it.
To have these talks in the end.
It's not an issue. It's not.
Okay, and I guess what I would require of the administration to really make sure that we try to do it earlier as possible so we could get that RFP in.
Yeah, we're going to have to start. This is one of the most difficult RFPs that there is. I'm sure that we start writing on here several months ahead of time in 2012. So we'll probably start early in the summer to get it ready. Yeah.
So actually, what's on the display now, there were some other timelines, but we've got other items to discuss as well. But what the chart here would say that in April, and believe me, there's a lot of activity that leads up prior to the release of the RFP, meetings with your benefits committee, administration, any input from anyone. This will be the opportunity for anything that you want to consider that you're not currently contracting for, you know, to make that known so they can get incorporated in the process through the solicitation. But essentially through April and May, the RFP gets released, it comes in, your team evaluates it. In June, it's being presented to your committee for your input with a timeline to have it available to you for approval no later than July. If you want to move that up, you can. The only problem is, especially with as it relates to the reinsurance contract, that's the part of the contract where the carriers are assuming some risk. And typically, if you ask them to assume it more than 6 months prior to the effective date, they won't give you a firm number because they're concerned that the risk profile or catastrophic claims data can change, and they'll release contingent numbers. So it's kind of and I can tell you too that Blue Cross and Blue Shield is not uncompetitive in their fees, either for the administration or the reinsurance. The provider discounts that they gather through their network, and we test them against all their competition in this market as well as others on a regular basis. But they're a very competitive healthcare provider. That's how they emerged as your recommendation several years ago. They have one of the broader networks. So you know, whereas during the RFP process, you may ultimately end up electing another claims administrator or provider network, it would be misleading to think that there's going to be a substantial difference in the fees that they charge. So that part's not going to change. And unless you change the risk profile of your employees, it's not going to change. So, you know, there's, unless, you know, things happen that are unexpected, but the way things are right now, it's a very competitive marketplace. We just concluded a proposal in Central Texas for a public entity. 3,000 employees over a two-year time period where we put all these carriers together against each other. The total difference in the administrative fees was $60,000 over a two-year time period. And that included Blue Cross and Humana, United Healthcare, Aetna, and some other large carriers. So, it's, you know, it's, it would be misleading to think that there's going to be a substantial difference in the fees. We certainly will negotiate the best ability. You might see some opportunities open up on the pharmacy benefit management. That's a little bit more competitive. You might see some players emerge that could outperform Blue Cross in that category. But the process would be to start in time, you know, for sure that you have it set and decided upon and ready to go. There's going to be a change that's a smooth transition as you roll forward to January 1, 2013.
Through the chair.
Dr. Murphy.
Can you expand upon the comment that we're doing better than our neighbors?
Well, sure. Over the last 4 years, you have essentially in the third year, you made some significant changes in your contributions and benefit plan designs. You made some reductions there. But pretty much all of your peer groups here, the El Paso, the Isleta, the rural school districts, have incurred even more pressure on their rates. El Paso ISD, for example, had a pretty significant change a year ago. They incurred another change. They elected to join the Teacher Retirement System Active Care. Mm-hmm. So they actually took a benefit reduction and an increase in cost on January 1 when they made that switch. And TRS Active Care announced benefit reductions and 11% increase this September 1. So unfortunately, the folks at El Paso ISD had experienced three rate increases with benefit reductions in less than a 24-month time period. Last year, the Isleta School District increased its contribution to $370 per employee. The district here is currently at $378. So they weren't funding enough, but they've caught up and they're now in your peer group. The district that probably has the highest overall cost is, collectively, is probably Socorro. But Socorro contributes a whole lot more to its employee cost as part of its overall compensation strategy, which helps keeps its payroll deduction costs low. So if you just look at what does it cost the employee, the Socorro plan looks pretty attractive to employees. But if you look at how much does the district contribute to it, and I believe it's at close to $550 per employee, significantly much higher. The only district that outperforms you in terms of overall cost has been the San Elizario School District. And they've just, for whatever reason, not had very much in the way of costs. Their district contribution is just under $300 per employee, and its plan has not had to have any significant rate changes or benefit changes in the last several years.
All right. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Rodriguez?
I make a motion to accept the administration's extension for current district administrative services
and
cross pollution.
All right.
And I'll second.
What's administration's recommendations?
The total recommendation to extend it to 16 months.
Yeah, the 16 month and then the 30 day, whatever else was.
The 30 day wait period and to begin the plan to effective January 1st.
Right. The three, but four recommendations, right?
Go back to that, Randy, so it'll be in front of the board.
Mm-hmm. I'll second that.
All right.
Ms. Gonzalez-Harris.
Okay.
We have.
Are they good? Did they get it all?
You got that.
We approve the committee's recommendation, and Tony, we make sure we list them in the minutes the way it's written there.
All right, and that just to review, the recommendation of the committee was to extend the contract with Blue Cross until December 31st, 2011, and begin a new plan year with Blue Cross Blue Shield on January 1st, 2012 through December 31st, 2012, and to implement a 30-day waiting period and to go out for bid for an effective date of January 1, 2013. All right, so that's the motion to approve the committee's recommendation for the extension of the current district administrative services agreement with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. Any further discussion, comments from the board? If not, Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Serna?
Yes.
All right, thank you to the committee and Mr. McGraw and the administration. Thank you for
and I want also to thank Mr.
Gunn,
one of the
very
helpful
to
thank
Mario's done a great job.
Yeah. Thank you, Mario.
Jordan, you going? Thank you for all the work you did on DC 2011, Jordan. I forgot to thank my family earlier. Staying there, my wife and Jordan and my youngest daughter Rachel helped out a great deal, and I appreciate that.
Our families.
All right. Next agenda item.
Item 7B, budget update for fiscal year 2011-12. Mrs. Zapita and Ms. Carrasco.
All right. Martha.
Good evening, Board President Coronado, Board Members, Dr. Murphy. This evening's presentation is going to be similar to the one I gave on March 8th. However, this one has an exact tax rate amount.
Better outlook.
Very good news. And I'll begin, and then we'll also be sharing the adoption timeline, which is coming up very quickly, as well as Ms. Carrasco will be presenting some compensation options for you to consider. The first slide I'm presenting is basic campus enrollment projections. Again, this is the same information that I've shared in the last couple of months with projections of a 2% increase in enrollment and basically with a per capita campus allocations of $115 for high school, $100 for middle school, and $90 for elementaries. They do, in addition, get state comp ed funds as well as UIL funding and copier usage. The information is listed as well. I am using the information on enrollment based on the PEAMS snapshot date that was in October, which is what also TEA looks focuses on as they start working their numbers. We did receive preliminary property valuations. And the good news is it was an increase. I had been projecting a 3% increase, and it's at a 5% increase, knowing that in July we will have our final certified property values coming to us. At this rate, our preliminary totals are at $1,121,824,000.
And that's more than an estimate, because before it was just an estimate. That is
right.
A preliminary from
the El Paso Central Appraisal District. The fourth slide is the calculated tax rate. And so again, based on the 2011 property values, preliminary values at $1,004,000, we have a maintenance and tax operation rate of $1.17, and our debt service, which is the INS tax rate, at 25 cents. And if you will recall, this tax rate, the 25 cents, will not be affected or increase until January 2013. Important factors to consider in the budget projections that I have are district enrollment projections of 6,100 students enrolled in our district next year, and our student ADA at 5,600 students, which has gone up compared to last year's ADA. Again, our property taxes of $1.17 for M&O and our interest and sinking tax rate of 25 cents. And our projected, with our property values coming in at $1.4 billion, our projected property tax revenue to the district is $16,302, which if you recall from the last presentation, it was at $14 million that we were expecting at a $1.04 rate. So it's good news. On this slide, the presentation I had made initially in January and in February, we were using projections of 5% and 7% reduction, which were at 5%, we would be seeing a state reduction of $1.4 million. And the worst case scenario, which we had in play, was 7%, which was about $2 million in cuts from the state. March 8th, we did receive some information from OKC where we were looking at anywhere between $2.6 and $4.7 million of cuts to the district, which were actually worse than what our original projections were. Then on April 26th, we did receive information on State Representative Scott Hochberg. His school finance proposal had us pegged for a $3.2 million reduction in state funding. And so this slide is using the latest, which is again the Mr. Hochberg's projections. And basically, I will share the, on the side I have local sources, which generally means our property values, our state sources, which is again the state revenue that we receive, and then federal and other sources, and that is in the form of our food service program mainly, which is also something that is adopted by the board. The first column is a 2011 adopted, and that is what we actually adopted, you adopted on August of 2010. And then 2012 column, the middle column, is our estimated projection revenues for this current year. As I said, we have our $16.8 million in property values or local sources. We do have state sources coming in at $25.7 million. And in that amount, I've already deducted that $3.2 that we are paying to be reduced. And so that puts us at a revenue of $46.4 million for the 2011-12 school year. I would also like to add that Gustavo has a contact in Austin that right now had got some information where it's looking like instead of a $7 billion cut for education, it might be looking like a $4 billion cut. It's not final. We're not sure if it's going to finalize before May 31st, but if that were to be the case, then our outlook is a very positive one where we would be seeing an additional probably $1.9 million to our revenue to the good. So it's good news. I don't know if it's going to be passed this evening or we're going to have to go into June for the final number. But right now, that's what it's looking for. And he just shared that information with me.
Mr.
Chairman.
Dr. Rodriguez.
The next time you would present on the budget, I would still like to see if we were to be at the $1.04, just to have a comparison, so that way, if we need to communicate, you know, this is what we would have been at.
Sure.
This is what we're currently at.
Okay. Thank you.
So on this slide, I basically have the estimated revenues, which is $46.4 million in revenue, and again, that's already considering the reduction that Hochberg's plan has, and that number comes if you want to go back to page 6, that's the column with the revenue there. Under estimated expenditures, we are currently at $46.2 million in expenditures. That's campus and department allocations and then your basic operation costs. And that puts us at revenues over expenditures of $254,000. Obvious that, you know, without that tax ratification election, we would, you know, it would have been a difficult situation for us.
Through the chair, that is just an amazing number, that revenues less expenditures. When you look at Hochberg's $3.2 million cut and that the TRE brings in basically about $3.2 million, we spoke in our information sharing
campaign about how the TRA would do nothing but keep us even. That was something we said over. There was no luxury in the TRA to keep us even. Well, there it is right there. Minus Hochberg plus the TRE were to the good $250,000. Not to the good $3 million, but to the good, right? There is no luxury. The TRE closed the square to within $250,000. And it just goes to show that we were saying the right thing on that. And if the TRA would not have passed, that number would have been minus 3.2 million or 3.1 million or something like that. So we were true in our comments to the community. Now, if Hochberg is funded at a higher level, that 254 will go up, but we don't know yet.
Right. The green item that I've lined, additional revenue, education jobs fund, so as everyone's aware, we did receive another federal allocation of $1 million. And so when you add that revenue, which it used, just like we used the state fiscal stabilization funds, which was to pay salaries, if we use it in the same manner, we will have revenue over expenditures of $1.2 million.
Mr. Chair, is this a one-time?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Lori.
Martha, I'm not seeing in here. I know that the state is going to give us matching funds of some sort for passing the TRE.
The funds are included when we enter the information into the state funding template. We enter our enrollment numbers, our ADA. There's a line item where it says, what is your tax rate? And so it is part of the 25 million. If you go back to slide 6, and you see the item in blue that says 25.7 million, it's already in that amount. Unfortunately, with the state reduction, it doesn't look as appealing as it could have, because it's pretty much getting us to the level point where we have a balanced budget.
So what I'm hearing is that we don't really see a check come to us that says,
it's part of
you passed your TRE, here's your bonus for it. It's just your foundation funding. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this one?
Can you go over the asterisks below? Okay.
The first asterisk says basically that the expenditures that I have estimated under 46.2 million are based with a 2% increase in per capita allotments for each campus. And an increase in day-to-day operations, utilities, fuel, the average expenditures that we see. And then the one with a double asterisk is to inform you that this amount, these expenditures do not include any type of salary increases at all. And so just wanted to make sure that was clear.
So the 254,000, we have the jobs bill, and I understand that, but the 254,000, without the jobs bill, is all the money that we would have to give compensation additions for next year. Now, we do have the $1 million, but it's not a biennial amount. It's just 1 year.
Right.
So we really have $500,000 for each year.
What about the 6 days?
The 6 days remain.
Well, she'll talk about
that. Sorry. Martha will be presenting on that.
So this still just barely keeps us level.
We're still not able to give large compensation increases as of today in any way, shape, or form.
I'm still in the process of where Martha and HR and finance is still working through, making sure we're coming through the salaries, all our employees, ensuring that all vacancies have been removed that are not going to be filled, that everybody is funded and at the right level. So when I present on June 6th again, with that presentation, I will be providing you numbers by function and then by object code, and the expenditure level might either decrease or increase them as we find positions that perhaps we need to close, and because they're not positions we're going to rehire, but kind of have remained on the team system, which it's a matter of reconciling the team system between HR and finance, and so it's fine to going through it with a fine-tuned comb right now. And so this next slide, before Martha moves forward with her presentation, I'm just to inform you that we will have another publication in the Courier to post the adoption of the notice for the adoption of the budget, as well as any tweaking we need to do to the INS tax rate. It'll stay at the same level at 25 cents. However, it'll go like a tenth of a penny over to the right or to the left based on information that our financial advisors provide for us.
Mr. Please, Martha,
yes.
Anywhere in any of this is our $3.7 million budget year change included?
No.
Okay, so that is its own entity.
As we close a year, the mm-hmm. funding will go into the fund balance, and I will be presenting information on the policy CE, which mm-hmm. governs the fund balance and yep. how we move around with the fund balance. And so basically it'll go to fund balance, and then it's at board's discretion how they want to go forward with the funds that we capture from the fiscal year change.
Thank you.
But this is just projections on revenue that we can expect for next year.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Letty?
I know that previously it included whatever we had, positions we had wanted to do away with. You know, you mentioned that you're going to give it to us by functions.
Yeah, last year's budget I did present by function and by object.
My request now is that, for example, we're here having this estimated revenue. Can you give us what you gave us previously? Not what you gave us previously, but what is included under estimated revenues? Can you list what is included under that total?
Are you revenues referring to the...
Well, both revenues and expenditures. Revenues and expenditures, I'm sorry?
Like the associate superintendent and stuff?
Well, whatever is listed under revenues, because you only indicated a total there. But can you summarize the totals? Well, you only included a summary.
Like what was allocated to the campuses and what was
can you itemize indicating, for example, you just give us a total?
Like, in the past, you also used to give us, like, it was $600,000 for... you know, the step increase, if we had to put that. But in the fiscal year change from last fiscal year to this fiscal year, what is...
There were items that I hadn't budgeted for. I do recall that list that you're...
And so the whatever that percentage changes from last year to this year, I think I would like to see that mm-hmm. too. And I don't know if that's what you're trying to get
yeah,
at.
Yeah, and then, for example, these are estimated expenditures. I mean, you gave us a total, but we don't know what is.
I did provide in March the budgeted allocations that we're giving to campuses and departments, but I can certainly do that again.
But some of those figures have changed. Like, for example, and now this is my question, did some of those figures change?
As far as campus and department allocations, no, they didn't. Basically, what we're looking at is on salaries. We're ensuring that everybody's, you know, that we've got all the salaries crossing over to the new year. Operational, district-wide expenditures that we need to consider, you know, like projections for utilities for next year, projections for district substitutes, where but I can provide that listing if that's what you want to see. On how much we're allocating for the different operations.
Sorry, I can recall some of the items that were there. They said, we're just going to list them there, but that doesn't mean they were going to get them. And I just want to know if they're included in this total.
Are you referring to priorities, maybe?
Is that well, I just want to see what is included.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think what I would like to see, I don't know if this is what you would like to see, that whatever we have in the past fiscal year budget, and whatever we've seen an increase in, whether it's salaries, whether it's inflationary costs on utilities or health insurance, whatever that we have to project the increase, so that way we're able to analyze, okay, well, this is what we were at last year's levels, and this is what we're looking at now. And the reason why we see that change is because this is happening.
Okay. And I think with the function and the object, I do show that percentage change as well, but I will get that information.
Thank you.
Dr. Murphy?
Yeah,
Are we done with the discussion? Because I have a housekeeping item I want to go over.
Anybody have any questions?
Okay. The board meeting is scheduled where there's going to be a lot of information on June 6th, which is a Monday evening. When would the board direct administration to get the packet to them? First of all, Martha, what is your list you could have it? What are you thinking on that?
Well, we're in the process of converting that information into the team system because we're building our budgets in the team system. And so basically I have 2 weeks to work on it right now as we stand, assuming that it was a Friday delivery of the packet.
Well, but we can't give it to them on Friday with the meeting on Monday. That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're going to have to do, what about Wednesday, June 1st delivery?
I can drive. We'll work on that.
What? We have a board meeting that night anyway on June. What is June 1st?
June 1st is Wednesday.
Oh, that's the interviews for legal. We could give you the packet at the interviews, which would be in the evening on the 1st, which would give you the full day, Martha, to have that to them when we interview for legal June 1st. And then that would give the board 5 days advance.
That'd be Wednesday?
Wednesday the 1st in the evening when you come for the interviews. Martha, can you do that?
I will work.
Okay. Tony, can you write that down?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Carrasco, you would also have an update that would go in that packet on Wednesday the 1st regarding compensation. Okay.
On the 6th, we'll also be providing to you for your approval the stipend listing for you to review, as well as any further discussion on compensation package that Martha might have. And then we will have a June 21st meeting, hoping that would be the date that you adopt the budget. If that's not the case, then we have June 21 last before the June 30th deadline to adopt the budget for the new fiscal year.
That meeting would be optional,
right?
Just in case they couldn't get it done on the 21st.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Lori.
Martha, on June 1st, when you'll give us the budget, will we see the stipend listing?
Yes.
As well, that can be ready. Thank you very much.
We will be taking that to personnel committee next week for discussion, and then so that we can submit with the personnel decision list.
So we'll see that in good time, so that if we have any input,
right? You can see that with the Wednesday package.
Great, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lori. All right. Anybody else? Okay, Martha, you're up.
Do we have, in that schedule, do we have our facilities minutes?
We're combining it with a special meeting on June 6th.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep, that's right.
Dr. Murphy, may I ask a question on that? Did we ask you last time if we were supposed to get the personnel minutes? Regarding your committee that you have here?
From my recollection, you wanted to report on the personnel committees whenever we created a new position.
No. To come to the full board. And I think the minutes were to be
minutes.
And we haven't had a personnel committee suspended all the committee meetings until this Wednesday. Because of the TRE activity and all of that, so we had suspended our personnel committee meetings.
Good.
I think we only had one after that meeting where we discussed that, but we haven't had any one since, and so we're planning on this coming Wednesday.
And I guess, Dr. Murphy, just to clarify the minutes, whenever there is a meeting on the personnel, if we could get those in our party.
Let me ask a silly question. Does the personnel committee keep minutes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. In EPISD, they do not. So, what we do? All right. So, we need to start putting those in the packet. Tell me. Thank you.
Okay, we're moving forward with the compensation package. And really, this is just brainstorming on paper because we still don't have the clear picture of the finances. I mean, we're in a time crunch, Martha Gita and myself, in the sense that we've got just this really quick turnaround time. TRE passed. We've got the new budget here that we've got to work on and get approved. And so we've got this small window. Now with the TRE passing, we went out and did our thank you tour to all the campuses. Some of the employees were asking, you know, what does this mean for us? And of course, you know, as Dr. Murphy has explained on several occasions and to everybody, is that, you know, with the passage of the TRE, basically, you know, it was to stay slick, to stay even. However, Martha has informed me that there is, you know, there is maybe something that we could play with. So Dr. Murphy has given you 7 options. I believe he's provided those for your review. And like I said, it's not anything that we really need to go into very heavy discussion over, because it's just brainstorming until we get more clarification on what we want on our finances. Again, what we're looking at is the 6-day furlough to be maintained. So the 6-day furlough would be maintained, and of course, as I said, anything as far as compensation is based on the financial conditions and the state reductions, what the final decision on that is.
And can y'all talk about the 6-day furlough in relation to teams?
Yes. Well, first of all, calendars, as far as what Dr. Murphy is referring to, for the 11-12 school year have been initialized. And with teams, once a calendar is initialized, it's difficult to change. It creates all sorts of problems. And so for the 11-12 school year, our calendars were initialized in February because, again, they had to be initialized. Simply because Dr. Murphy's calendar starts in February, and the internal auditor's calendar, who was hired in February, also starts in February. So we had to go ahead and move forward and initialize all calendars. So that would be one of the obstacles to giving back days this coming year. The other thing is that in talking to TASB, I did mention to them that, you know, can we pass our TRE? We've got options here that we're looking at potentially. And, you know, what they thought would be best. Do we want to give back days, the 6 days, or a portion of the days, or do we want to give raises based on the days that we currently have? And the recommendation was that if we could make our salary schedules more competitive. Right now, that we're kind of like on an upswing, where all the other districts are going to stay. We went to a meeting this morning with the other school districts, and most of them aren't giving their employees any raises. Everything is staying status quo. So TASB is saying, you guys are on an upswing right now where everybody's staying, and you guys can move up a little bit and get more competitive or catch up. And so their recommendation is that if we could do a small increase and update our pay scales, that would be the way to go. I went ahead and provided TASB with all our employee demographics, data, payroll information, salary schedules. And so they're cranking the numbers to see what kind of pay scales, new pay scales they can provide for us. So again, we're waiting. I'm going to be waiting on them so that we can go ahead and I can provide Martha those schedules so she can work with, so that we can, you know, put together some sort of compensation package for our employees. And in the options, of course, one of the options is to do nothing at all, as far as, you know, no structure classification change to the current district compensation plan. outside of the state mandated Chapter 21 increases. I believe in talking to Dr. Murphy about this. Like I said, we're brainstorming. He does believe that the teachers deserve that step increase. Whether or not the state removes it or not, he would want the teachers to have their step increase. So that would be something that we're looking at. Again, we could restructuring our pay scales based on TASB recommendations, and then salary increases would be based on that, and also the state mandated Chapter 21 increases. And all the options, we're maintaining the 6-day furlough, and we're doing the Chapter 21 step increases. Option two is provide the state mandated Chapter 21 increase and adjust teacher hiring schedule to maintain regional competitive. So that would mean that we would just be affecting the teacher group, the Chapter 21, and nobody else. Option three would be to provide the state mandated step increase and no across the board raises to anyone else. But we would provide equity adjustments for key jobs that are paid below market. TASB would assist us in that. So that means that some employees would see an increase, others may not. It just depends on the comparisons that they would do with market. Option.
Move the slide, Mark.
Sorry. Option four would be to provide a 2% base increase for all employees. That would be across the board for everybody. And this, of course, we've been informed that the state mandated Chapter 21 increase usually is a little bit below 2%. So if we just did 2% across the board, it would cover everybody. And then plus, we might have to do some equity adjustments. So that would be option number four. Option number five would be to provide a 2% increase from midpoint. So the difference between option four and five is that we're taking the increase from midpoint, and on four we're taking it from base pay. So, you know, it's just a different way of looking at it. And
option five is more expensive than option four.
Yes.
Why is midpoint more expensive than base?
Basically, we've got in every position or role, an employee has what we call the base pay, which is the starting point, and there's the midpoint and the max point. And so basically, based on your number of years or experience, you are placed within the scale. And so what we would do is, for example, even if it's a clerk that is at a base pay because it's her first year on the job, but her position, her role, base pay, let's assume base pay is $10 and midpoint is $15. What we would do if we said 2% from midpoint would be that we would say that the $15 rate, multiply it by the 2%, and whatever that dollar amount, that increase would be, we'd add it to her base pay amount. So it's a slightly higher rate for the employee, especially those that are entry-level employees that would see a higher benefit than, say, somebody with more years of experience.
Option six would be a combination of doing option three and four on base pay, 2% across the board pay increase, and then adjust our pay ranges and update job classifications to improve market competitiveness. Option seven, again, it's a combination of three and five. And again, the difference is we're doing it at base, and option seven we're doing at midpoint. So, like I said, we can do any combination of these. I'm currently waiting, like I said, we just sent off the information to TASB. They promised that we're going to work on that as quickly as possible, you know, given that we have the small window to turn things around. And get our budget approved. So hopefully they can come through for us, and then we can be ready by the 6th with this information, or by the 1st, so that we can provide that information to the board.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Lori.
How long do you think it will take you? Will it take you till you get TASB's information back to put a number to these?
Martha has already worked on numbers based on our current pay scales. So we've got, she's got numbers on that. But of course, we would need to wait for TASB to come back with the salary scales, the new ones, so that we could go ahead and calculate what that would be.
And what I'm hearing is that any one of these we can afford.
Well, that's the
today.
The question is based on our funding, our state cut, how it comes in. That's what would determine. Right now, okay, we are to the positive 1.2 million, but that's counting on the education jobs federal funds we receive, and so that's assuming that's going to go away in a year. So we have to make sure that we can sustain this for years to come. And so if the news that Gustavo shared about instead of a $7 billion cut, a $4 billion cut, that's very good news for us, because certainly we could look at all the options.
These are sustainable then.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, that'd be sustainable for 2 years.
Yeah.
Running out till they meet again.
I really think we should think about that jobs bill as two $500,000 pieces. A $500,000 for this year and then a $500,000 for next year.
Although the grant is, though, just for...
Well, I know, but if we put it in compensation and we're going to give a raise based on that million, it's got to carry 2 years, because next year there's no legislature meeting, there's no more money, no opportunity. So it has to sustain at least as part of the budget for 2 years and not just one minimum.
But we'd have to spend it.
Yes.
This year.
Yeah.
But we need to.
I think what Dr. Murphy is alluding to is that we would have to, if we.
The plan would be.
Look at it for a $500 grant.
Yeah.
And then through fund balance.
Yeah.
In other words, the savings we have for the $500
right
this year, mm-hmm, we would use it in next year's out of fund balance.
Right.
Not fund balance.
No, that's not what there's. I understand.
No, I understand. Yeah. As part of the compensation package, what we'd have to supplement.
Yeah. Well, if it's a compensation package, I think, if I might, Mr. Chair, I think what we need to look at, for me personally, I would like to look at across the board. Secondly, I think we need to look at certain areas where we might need to should have played catch up and try to play catch up with that money. Once the picture is more clear, then I'll be able to be more comfortable.
And I'll be in communication with them every other day if necessary, to kind of push them so that we can get that information as soon as possible, since I know it's crucial for some of the decisions that we need to make here. But I did agree that in order right now, because of the situation we're in, that it probably is a good time to maybe try and up those pay scales a little bit, given that, and try to catch up with the other districts. Maybe not close the gap entirely, but we'll get a little closer.
Some of the positions, like you said, some of them are high.
I don't know that we, right now, until we have a clear picture from the legislature, I don't know about talking about across the board increases, even with our jobs funding for the year. It could put us in a very the same situation in another year for the following budget year. Then we have a problem. We're going to have to cut them back off. I think we're kind of getting a little ahead. Let's wait for the legislature to make their decision.
Can I clarify myself real quick?
I think what we need to do is set priorities as money becomes available, really.
Uh-huh.
And I think priorities would be maybe adjustments for equities and competitiveness first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what the rest of the board thinks, but I think that should be probably first and foremost on our mind.
Let me clarify myself first.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to dip into or use the jobs bill for salaries or anything like that. Second, I wouldn't want to dip in the fund balance, especially depending on what the state legislator is going to do. Thirdly, I'd rather see what the state legislature is going to do. But if we're able to afford it without having a dip into fund balance, having not to use the jobs bill, let's look at that area.
Actually, the jobs bill would be great to give, if we could, the jobs bill would be great to give back some of the days just for this year to the employees. But I understand the problem with that.
And that's that's
because of our situation with the teams issue, but that actually would be excellent for that say, hey, look, if we could sustain it the following year, we will. If not, at least we'll give you some days back this year because of this jobs bill.
Or maybe we could do across the board stipend.
A one-time bonus.
We can look at something like that. That would be akin to giving them back some of the days for this year. Monica.
Ms. Carrasco, just to clarify, you said you've already been in talking with TASB and you've already sent them all the job descriptions and the pay scales and all that, and we're supposed to get information or feedback back from them saying where we stand, where we're at. Is that correct?
Yes. Uh-huh. They're going to evaluate our pay scales against the market and then make those recommendations. And of course, you know, and we've been talking about it, you know, whatever recommendations they come back with, it's not an absolute. I mean, these are things that are going to help us make decisions. But of course, you know, ultimately as a district, we can make our own decisions as to what how we want to compensate our employees and what we need to do. But we use them as guidance, and so that's why we provided them information so that we could have them start working on it.
Okay, thank you.
Because I can already see it, I can already hear it from the disgruntled employees, and I experienced it. It's not equitable. It's not equitable. I can see some overpaid, some underpaid. So I already see this problem.
Well, we'll see what comes back. And like I said, you know, we'll bring all that information before the board for you to analyze and give us some guidance on what direction you want us to go in. But you know, we'll bring they have at their hands, you know, the entire state, and so they can compare, and like I said, whatever information they come back with, it's not an absolute. We can take it or we can leave it. So those decisions, that's why I'm saying what we're doing is, you know, kind of just brainstorming, you know, what do we need to do, where can we get more information, and then ultimately once we have the big picture and all the pieces, we can start making those decisions.
You know, if I might, through the chair, daydreaming about getting higher teacher salaries and being super competitive in the teacher market, I mean, that really vaults our district forward to get the teacher salaries really strong in comparison. So where that we're drawing the best and the brightest here, that would be fantastic. I don't know how we can do it, but the TRE is certainly going to help in that regard. So that's really good news. Especially if the Hochberg comes down. Great.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
So then, it costs about 1.7 billion. What it costs.
Mm-hmm. There's a bit more to be found.
I have a feeling that it's not going to drop to 4
billion. Well, that's our projection.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying the controller is projected to have an extra revenues.
We will see. Especially not if the House has their way.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, anybody have any other questions?
No. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you, Martha and Martha.
Very good.
Nice job, ladies.
Thank you. All right. Takes us to...
Item 8, the consent agenda, to consider approval of board meeting minutes of April 14th and April 27th, 2011, the attendance financial and warrant list for April 1st through the 30th, 2011, in the total amount of $664,441.81, budget amendments, acceptance of donations, second reading of DIA local, purchase of Renaissance Learning Successful Reader, English in a Flash, and Accelerated Math in the total amount of $111,820.89 utilizing CSP 10-09. Purchase of 12 laptop computers for Jose Damian from Desert Communications in the total amount of $10,347.24 utilizing DIR Cooperative Contract DIR SSD 1364. Purchase of 22 laptop computers for gifted and talented students K through 8 from Desert Communications utilizing DIR Purchasing Cooperative Contract DIR SSD 1364. Purchase of ClassBridge Standards-Based Individual Education Plan, IEP Program from Technical Perspectives Incorporated in the total amount of $11,726. Purchase of Microsoft Volume Licensing for 2011-12 school year from GovConnection in the total amount of $47,282.19. Utilizing Purchase Cooperative DIR SDD890TX. Graphing calculators, smart view, and overhead screens kits from Tech Depot in the amount of $79,657.99, utilizing the TCPN Purchasing Cooperative Contract Number R5023, and special needs school bus from Blue Star Bus Sales Limited in the total amount of $95,250, utilizing the TASB Buy Board Purchasing Cooperative Number 30608.
All right. Before I entertain a motion on the consent agenda, would anybody like to have any of these items pulled for separate discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would. I would like A2 and F.
All right. A2 and F will be pulled. Anybody else? All right. Hearing nobody else, then we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda with the exception of items A2 and F. And I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right. Tony, pull the board.
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. González?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
All right. Agenda item A2.
Mr. Chair, on A2, I noticed that at our last meeting, and I spoke to Dr. Murphy about this, we wanted to extend our contract issues with the Hunt Corporation past the June 15th date. And I think at that time we thought it was going to be on this agenda. I guess it fell through the cracks. I just wanted to remind the board, Dr. Murphy, somebody, anybody, that we need to have this on a future agenda.
We can put it on Monday's agenda.
Great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And Ms. Searles, you're right. It was supposed to be tonight, and I apologize. It just simply fell through the cracks, just like I said.
There's a lot going on, Dr. Murphy.
There was the last couple of weeks.
And actually, it's plenty of time. And I think Hunt had said that that won't be an issue anyway.
Right. They took the pressure off that. Justin Chapman communicated to me that he was not concerned about a specific day as long as it was done, as long as we continue to move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Is that it on A2?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. I'll entertain a motion on agenda item A2.
I'll second it.
All right. I'm making a motion to approve
the minutes?
Or the special meeting that's A2, right? Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Do I hear a second now?
I'll second it.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Agenda item A2. Any further discussion? Tony.
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. González?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
All right. Item F.
Hi.
Pam.
Coronado board members and Dr. Murphy. Before I give you some more information on Renaissance Learning, I would like to share with you some information regarding the sales representative for Renaissance Learning, who is Connie Vega. Renaissance Learning has been in the district for over 10 years, and currently we are utilizing Accelerated Reader, and we have been for a while. more than 10 years. In fact, the company, Connie and the professional development person was out at Garcia Elementary giving professional development to re-energize the program. K2 in the morning, switching subs out 3-5 in the afternoon. And the word was that it went very well and was very well received. Additionally, Connie Bella has two children here in the district. She is a member of our community. And her husband is Jaime Vega, who served on the Budget Stakeholders Committee and was, for a short time, treasurer of the Political Action Committee for DC 2011. And I just wanted to put that out there, disclose that information.
Mr. Baskin, through the chair, Mr. Baskin, is there a concern regarding that information and the purchase of this product or the consideration of the purchase of this product?
No, sir. Mr. Baskin, the only concern would be is if she was related to a board member or a decision maker, such as you or Mr. Gatlin or something, but just being related to a community member or a volunteer, then it's not an issue at all.
Thank you.
All right.
I have one question.
Ms.
Vera, who made the decision to buy this program?
Actually, the principals made the decision with the support of our directors for special programs, the IT department as well. And one of the things we do is we make decisions by committee. And so we did bring the principals in along with the instructional coordinators. We brought in the IT department, we brought in the directors, and we had vendors present and make choices based on the needs. Because one of the things and one of the reasons that I haven't done this sooner is, you know, we've had a lot this year. We've had a lot come before. We've had the Educoria, which was huge with the data. We've had Kilgo. We've had the PLCs. We've had the walkthroughs. We've had the C-scope, the deeper implementation of C-scope. And through the learning of the PLCs and the process of what a PLC should look like, it really came to light that we need a Tier 2 intervention. And we talked a lot about Tier 2 response to intervention, but we needed some things that were systematic in our district that would serve the teachers well to serve the students and make it somewhat teacher-friendly, because it's a lot to ask teachers to plan wonderful lessons. And, you know, not every kid's going to get it the first time around, about 80%. Then you have another 20% that won't. And to put all that on the teacher's shoulders solely to come up with new lessons or new ideas, we really were looking for some things that were systematic, that were effective and manageable for teachers to do with students. So the teachers and the instructional coordinators selected with the blessing of the IT department and the directors.
Thank you very much.
Through the chair, one last question for Pam, if you don't mind. Pam, can you talk about how the funding of this would go, the money, and what I think initially we thought, I erroneously thought it was TCPN?
Oh, well, TCPN is the bid. They are actually, and I did miswrite that. The other two were part of the Texas Co-op Network, but Renaissance, actually, we did through a local bid. The funding for accelerated math is through the SSI funds. Student Success Initiative, which should be for intervention, which Accelerated Math is an intervention program. And the rest of it is through Title I funds.
All right, any further discussion?
Just real quick.
Todd Rodriguez?
I used to use Accelerator. Well, third grade, yeah. Well, set on me on elementary, and now it's to 1992.
Wow, okay, thank you.
All right.
So that's how long
we want to know your grades, Armando.
The computer system didn't work that well then.
All right.
Thank you very much, Ms. Spear.
Thank you, Pam. Any further questions?
No, sir.
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion at this time to approve the purchase of Renaissance Learning Successful Reader English in a Flash and Accelerated Math, Agenda Item 8F. Do I hear a motion?
I'll second that.
All right, there's a motion and a second, Agenda Item 8F. Any further discussion? Tony.
Mrs. Cossett?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
All right, takes us to Agenda item 9.
9A, consider process for RFQ for legal services interview. Dr. Murphy.
Would the board like to go to executive on this, and Larry, is that appropriate?
Yeah, that's right. We need to do that.
Well, can we just put this in the final executive session and see what else?
Why don't we take up whatever else we can do
okay,
before
no, let's
we
go?
Go
to executive. Then.
Let's see, discussion.
We could do these D and E.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't we do items D and E, guys, so we can things that we can get out of the way.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Item 9D.
C.
All
right.
C.
Okay. And just for the record, item B, consider award of RFP 1116 Bank Depository Services has been withdrawn by administration.
Right.
Item C, discussion and possible action regarding internal audit plan for 2011-12 school year.
Do you guys want to it's take that one up, or shall we do D and E and then?
What?
D and E.
It's just titled.
Okay, go.
Okay, no, we'll go. The majority wants to go. We'll go to D.
D? All right.
Instant.
All right, item D.
Item D, consider first reading of CE Local Annual Operating Budget. Mrs. Aguirre.
All right, Martha.
Good evening. In your packet, I provided a memo as well as the actual CE local policy that has red stripes and highlights. There's three items that I will be presenting to you for your review regarding policy CE. And basically, policy CE is an annual operating budget, and the first item of order is for the fiscal year change. We need to update that to reflect our actual fiscal years being at July 1st through June 30th fiscal year. The second item that I am proposing or sharing with you this evening is on, it's the items that are all highlighted in yellow, which is page 2 and 3 on your policy. And basically, GASB Statement 54 is requiring that we update our policy to have additional classifications of our fund balances as they appear on our financials. And in the past, we had three types of classifications for fund balance, which is a non-spendable fund balance, which is basically money that is used for contractual agreements. Obviously, it's non-spendable because it has been committed to a contract of some sort. Restricted fund balance is basically our inventory, our assets, our long-term debt, and any outstanding encumbrances that follow through from one year to the other. And then the third classification we have is unrestricted fund balance. And basically, this is truly our savings that is at used at the board's discretion as far as that they feel the need or our savings, a rainy day account. Within the unrestricted fund balance, what GASB 54 is requiring us to do, is that we have to have three classifications within our unrestricted fund balance. And so the classifications that they're requiring us to have now are committed fund balance, assigned fund balance, and unassigned. And this is, they feel, is a better way for us to report as a governmental entity, a better way, transparency, mm-hmm. to show where our funds are and how we're using them. Basically, as the CE local states, the superintendent will be designated by the board to make the decisions as to how the funds will be set in the fund balance. And the classifications, again, under committed fund balance is if there is a specific project that we, as an administration and as a board, decide that we are going to start saving towards. For example, a good one would be, we know that in about 3 years, we will have a new campus. And if we decide that we need to maybe allocate a couple $100,000 per year towards unexpected costs that will come up when the school is actually open, we would designate whatever funds we set aside for that project under the committed fund balance.
And so it would take board action to uncommit those funds in the future. The second category would be assigned fund balance. And basically, this is a category that is limited. If we foresee that we are going to have a deficit for the future school year, for example, if we were sitting here facing that we were going to have a deficit in our budget, we would and needed to use fund balance, we would assign fund balance money in the amount of the deficit that we are expecting for the following school year. And then the third is unassigned fund balance, and basically that covers everything else that isn't committed or assigned to any special project or deficit. And so basically this is, we needed to adopt this. It's a requirement that we have to meet by June 15th. And so this would be the first reading on that section. The third item that I'm sharing with you on policy CE, and it's actually at the bottom of page one, under fund balance, and this was as on a request from Mr. Rodriguez at the Finance, Facilities, and Audit Committee that we held in February. His recommendation was that we look and see if we could increase our minimum level or adequate level of fund balance. And currently, the district has it set to having 1.5 months of operating expenses in our fund balance. That would be the minimum required. The state does request that we have at least 3 months. And so right now, I'm assuming that at the point when this policy was created and designated that 1.5, it was because perhaps the times were tough and we weren't going to be in compliance if we had a higher fund balance. And so my projection based on we have our fund balance. Currently, we have $5 million in our fund balance, and the estimate of 1.5 months of operating expenditures is 2.5. So we are obviously at a higher level of fund balance. So my recommendation was that we move up to at least the 2 months adequate level of fund balance in policy.
Mr. Chair, if I'm right.
Mr. Rodriguez.
What would be the 3 months?
3 months would be $5 million. Right at 5 million. Because 1.5 months right now is 2.5.
I don't know. Me personally, I would like to see what the state recommends. I know we've been below that on the 1.5, but I would be more comfortable with going what the state recommends.
And right now, as we stand, because like I said, 1.5 months is 2.5 million. We currently have 5 million. So, you know, double that in this. We do have a 3 months. I didn't want to move forward with the 3 months because we didn't know how we were going to end up with our tax rate. And then we don't want to have a policy where our level is so high we can't maintain it and then it affects our first rating. So this is a first reading, and if that's what you decide, then
the other thing, did you have our financial advisors look at this to see if there was any recommendations that maybe the bond rating agencies would look at?
No, I haven't shared with them.
Okay. I would recommend that for the second reading to see if there might be any adjustments. My recommendation would be to go to 3. I don't know the rest of the board. It shows that we're, you know, fiscally conservative and solvent on that, just in case it were to happen. And looking at the times that we have now, it's important for us to be looking at that.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. Martha, I have a question.
Sure.
The operating expenditures, is that what our portion? Is that right? Because obviously operating expenditures of 40-some million.
This is for 1 month. Yeah, 2.5 is for 1 month operating. One month and a half is 2.5 million.
Right. But that's the operating expenditures would be what covers our portion of the funding, right?
Right, yes.
Not the entire operating expenditures.
Right.
Because the entire operating expenditures would be more akin to almost 4 million for a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if the state legislature decides to not fund us for or delay the funding like they're talking about doing right now.
That's me.
They're talking about cutting back the funding start for a month or so.
We wouldn't be, right now the talk is we won't see funding until November. So we have September and October.
Right. And we're talking, we would have access to our local funds, mm-hmm. but not theirs, which would be the balance. So if 1.5 months is 2.5 million, right?
Yes.
For our portion.
That's right.
The other, their portion would be, or the rest of the makeup of the operating expenditures at 1.5 months is probably, let's see, if that's 1.5, that's 2.5, you divide it by 3, it's basically 800,000, right? So 1.6 per year, I mean per month?
Per month.
So it's 3 point, no, 2.4, right? 2.4? For 2 months that we'd have to cover, that's about 5 million. So if we run through that problem, we would need to have that, right?
Yes.
Roughly? 2 months. So why didn't GASB recommend, or am I, that's a silly question. Because they don't see our legislature in the picture. Anyways. I think probably that might be more of a recommendation that we need to look at not just what to cover our operating expenditures, but in case there's a lack in the state, operating expenditures are funding for us as well. And so I agree that in order to cover that issue, we might want to go to the 3 months on our side, which would be...
Five.
So, but run it through our financial advisors, I think.
I would say, Mr. Chair, if I might, just let's go with that reading with the 3 months and see what our financial advisor, if there's any tweaking, depending on, I think, the percentage we would also have to look at, too.
Right. Currently, we have the INS, the debt service fund balance at no less than 10%. Of our current debt payments, and we currently have in our debt service fund balance 7.5 million. I'm sorry, the district requirement to pay our debt was $7.5 million, and so 10% of that is 752,000, and currently our fund balance is at 900, and I don't have the exact number, but it's about 950,000. So we are meeting that threshold as well. Right. So there, the recommendation I provided was a 15%, and we were still within, and that's about an $800,000 threshold that we would meet. And again, having stated that we have about 900,000 in our INS fund balance, we would still have some leeway in to cover any other expenditures related to debt service.
Well, if it's 10%, 15% would be 1.1 or 2, wouldn't it? It would be below it.
But because of our refunding, this was our payment is now 5 million.
Right.
The payment before that was at 7.5.
At 7.5? All right. We stretched it out over a longer period.
Right. We refunded. Remember, we had some bonds that were.
And ended up saving about $100,000 right. Anyways. Okay. I don't have a problem with that. I still think we need to ask our financial advisors for their opinion. But I think
that's probably... Let's go with the 3 months, go with the 15, and see if they recommend to go with the 20 instead of a 15%.
The 3 months, we need to ask. I don't want it to be at a point where it's... also so high that we're not spending the money on the kids
exactly.
and having to do that. I don't want to have a great savings when we don't need to have that much, and we'd rather be spending it on stuff for the kids.
And what I would recommend to do it on the reading, and then see what our FAs say.
Do that one. Can I put you in quotes on that, President?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do we need a motion for that? Mm-hmm. The first reading, and then we could go back and look at the second reading.
Yeah, but let's get the board's consent on what everybody else, what do y'all think about the amounts we're talking about? Rachel?
I'm good at 2 months.
At 2 months? Lori?
Same.
Two.
Three. I'll go for three right now. Find out what our...
We need Patsy back.
We need Patsy back. So it was... a tie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for now it stands at 1.5 months. The change was to 2 months, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. I guess well, let's take this up. Let's take it up on a formal vote then, as proposed, which is 2 months.
Well, Mr. Charles made and a motion first. I'll make a motion that we approve the administration's recommendation and going to a 3 month and keeping that 15%, which was presented by our administration. So everything that stands the administration's recommendation, the only thing we would go from our administration's recommendation from a 2 month would be to a 3 month.
Okay, is that the motion before the board?
That's your motion?
Yes.
All right.
And I'll second that.
All right, there's a motion and a second. The agenda item. Are you talking also that to move it to 15%?
No, that's what...
Just to maintain 10?
That's what's being recommended by administration is to go to 15%. They stroked out the 10.
All right.
They want you at 15.
All right. Any further discussion from the board? Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Can I say yes to everything except 2 months?
No.
No.
No, then, no. I want to get you.
Mr. Carter?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
No.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
No.
All right, motion fails. Then do I will entertain another motion then at this time.
Mr.
We have
Chair,
to have the first reading if we can't. We've got to have something, guys.
Mr. Chair, I move to consider the first reading of CE Local Annual Operating Budget with 2 months of operating expenditures.
All right.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Again, on agenda item 9D. Any further discussion? Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Cornell?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Just Mrs. Strauss?
Yes. Yes.
Next reading.
All right. First reading passes. Next agenda item.
Item E, consider first reading of FFF Local Student Welfare Student Safety, Ms. Carrasco.
Martha.
I bring before you FFF Local in regards to student welfare and student safety, and there's just two minor changes on it. That we're recommending, and the first one has to do with maintaining a reasonably safe environment, school environment, and what we've added is by providing adequate supervision of students while on school grounds before, during, and after school. I believe this has been an issue that has been brought forth, and Dr. Murphy has wanted this change in our policy. Principals will develop the protocols
for their respective campus to ensure that the proper student supervision is achieved. And parents or guardians are responsible in ensuring that students not riding on district-provided transportation are delivered and picked up from school in a timely manner. So we want to enhance our school environment as far as safety is concerned.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Rodriguez.
I make a motion to approve FFF local.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. First reading of FFF local student welfare, student safety, as proposed by administration. Any further discussion?
Through the chair.
Dr. Murphy.
President, I noticed in our book on page 170 that this paragraph we're talking about has two different colors of ink regarding the underlying section. That is immaterial. It all should be the same color. It doesn't mean anything. Just wanted to let everybody know that.
Okay. All right.
Without black and white, so.
Yeah. Any other?
No color, sorry.
Great.
It's
great.
It's great. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion from the board? Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Cuernavas?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
All right. Do y'all want to do item 9C or go to executive?
Is it going to take a long time?
I don't know. How long is item 9
it's just a
C
right
going to take?
Let's just do the motion to approve the. I make the motion to approve the internal audit charter.
I'll second that.
All right, Ms. Hidalgo, if you'll come up, please. It's agenda item 9C.
Item C, discussion and possible action regarding internal audit plan for 2011-12 school year.
All right, and we have a motion before the board. Ms. Hidalgo, do you want to make some comments?
To this clarify, it's a supervision audit plan, not the charter?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And secondly, I welcome any feedback that you have on changes to the plan. And I also want to clarify that the plan includes a proposal to change the audit year to align with our fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And that is documented in the plan as well.
Right. Okay. Any questions or comments from the board?
I think we need the motion changed.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Plan instead of chart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whoever's
the audit plan.
Are they in agreement?
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. I'll second the amendment. Okay.
All right. We have an amended motion on agenda item 9C to approve the internal audit plan for 2011-12 school year. Any further discussion or comments? If not, Tony.
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Cuernavas?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
All right, motion passes. We'll now go into executive session, agenda item 6. Tony?
The time is now 9:55 p.m. The meeting is to be closed into executive session.
I'll prepare a certified agenda while you're there, okay?
What time did we go in, Tony?
Registration fees were way
more.
No, 9:55
p.m.
9:55?
Our next year.
9:55 is when we went in, right?
Yes, sir. And the time is now 10:25 p.m. and the meeting is reconvened into open session.
All right. The board has concluded executive session, agenda item 6. That takes us to
yes.
Item 9A, consider process for RFQ for legal services interviews. Dr. Murphy?
Through the chair, I appreciate the conversation we had, and I think we're set for June 1st. And it is noted that all four candidates will be present and available for interview that evening, and I appreciate that we have the questions now set, and administration will we'll set the meeting to start at 4:30 with the first interview at 5 p.m., and administration will prepare all materials.
Okay. Anybody else have anything?
Nope.
All right, then I guess there's no action on this item, so we will go on to the next agenda item.
Adjournment.
By unanimous consent of the board.
Larry,
thank you, Lori. It was a good meeting. Thank you. Appreciate it, Lori.
Tony has it, and the board secretary's not here, so Mr. Cornell, if you'd sign your stuff, we'll get Patsy later.
You got it.
Okay. I've given her everything.
I know.
Was Robbie
no, missed the meeting? This has really been a fun meeting.
Have you had many like that?
Way too spoiled.
Have you had many like that, Larry?
No, I can't. I can't take a minute.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate it.
Be fine.
My name is Lauren. Good night, Tony.
Good night. Take care.
Oh,
goodness.
Oh,
here you go. Honey.
Thank you.
Well, did you buy the ticket?
Yes, ma'am.
Pull
it up? I got them for cheap. 271.
Can
you
mail
them in a
package?
Yes.
Yes. There were having the information and everything.
My boss doesn't know that I'm going by.
No, my boss doesn't know yet either. I know. And then he said that if you want to close the AR, we're going to do it again. Yeah, I'll help you guys. Because the kids really need that.
They've been more like you guys.
Yeah, they
or they'll say, or someone will make a good point, and they'll go, oh, I agree.